We're just waiting for Aaron to use his restroom.
Oh, yeah.
Should take me over.
By the way, can I get that again?
Oh, you're welcome. Gonna keep trying to mix it up.
Oh, you don't choose to sleep?
Testing. Meeting of the Planning Commission for March 8, 2017. My name is John Demidos. I serve as the chair. This evening, we have all commissioners present with the exception of Commissioner Morisseau, who's out on personal business. We also have our liaison Mayor John Stokes this evening with us, and I believe we have a few, maybe council members as well in the audience this evening. Before we start, I want to just pause for a minute. It's been a long journey with this initiative of downtown livability. And I want to acknowledge the time, the energy, and just the plain hard work by members of the community, by the commissioners here at the table, by our Mayor John Stokes, as well as a number of council members, and most of all, by our staff team. It's been many, many long hours, many long days, and so I want to say thank you. Thank you for the work. And hopefully we'll have a very good hearing this evening, get some good feedback, and obviously work the feedback in. So the first item is the approval of the agenda. Do we have a motion to approve the agenda?
Second.
Do we have a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Well, we have the agenda approved, so moving on then to public comment. I want to just clarify, this evening we have the public hearing. So if you have public comment on any topic other than downtown livability, this is a good time for you to come up, give us your name and address, and obviously share with us the topic of interest. So if there is nobody in the audience with public comment, yes, sir, please. Yep, if you could come up, give us your name and address, and then...
Chairman, Madam Vice Chair, and fellow council members, my name is Court Olson. I live in Bellevue at 15817 Southeast 26th Street. And I want to recommend and suggest strongly that you consider designating, if not all, at least a part of the Spring District as a special net zero energy district, and if not net zero, at least high energy efficiency district. And now's the time to do that while you're still in the development phase and most of that area has not yet been built. Other parts of the country are taking this sort of initiative, and it is consistent with the goal to keep our energy usage down and help save the planet from warming by using as little energy as possible. I happen to be a person in the building industry and a consultant on energy efficiency, so I could talk to you further, but I'm sure your time is limited tonight. I just want to plant that seed, and if you can suggest at another time how best to follow up, let me know.
Thank you, sir.
Hello, I'm Laura Goodwin Fertilbrink, and I'm here on behalf of the Belmead Homeowners Association. And I'm just wanting to say thank you very much to the City of Bellevue and all of its wonderful maintenance staff for the streets through all of this very difficult month of January, February, and now March, when they've had rain and snow, and they have done such a remarkable job. So I just want to say thank you to the City of Bellevue. You guys never get thanked enough. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll pass it on to the anybody else in the audience? Yes, ma'am. Yes. Ms. Hummer.
I'm Betsy Hummer, 14541 Southeast 26th Street. And it's nice to see such a great gathering here. A lot of residents and stakeholders and a lot of council members. And I remember quite a while ago there was a joint city council and planning commission meeting over at the fire station training facility. I thought that was pretty interesting. And one thing that I really carried away from there is one of the city council members mentioned that Bellevue is a very desirable place in which to build. And if we want amenities for our various neighborhoods, that we should just say, build it with these amenities like public places and affordable housing. And so I understand that some things can be, they can pay a fee in lieu, and so you don't have to have, for instance, the affordable housing. And I think that is a real disservice to our city. I would like to see a greater diversity of all different types of people throughout the city, and I believe that having affordable housing in any kind of residential situation, especially high rises where it can be changed, whatever the factor is, I think that would be a great idea. You know, up in my neighborhood, I take my dog Shadow for a walk. He's 13 years old, 100, or just 95 pounds. He's pretty big. And we go past the soon-to-be-built Bellevue College. You know, that's all market-rate student housing. And then we go to through the fields, and we see some newer homes in a higher-end, two higher-end developments right there in the 60s, more modest neighborhood. And then we go up to the entrance of the north entrance of Bellevue College, and there's King County Housing Authority, that hidden village, and then there's the apartments right next to it, which is market rate for the most part, but they also take Section 8 vouchers. I stopped in there and talked with a manager once. And then right next to that is Imagine Housing, and then Fir Terrace, which is a 50s modest housing. And then my neighborhood, which, as you all know, is the student housing for Bellevue College, soon to be. But it's still a nice 50s modest neighborhood, and it's affordable. It's way affordable for us. And I just like to see that kind of pattern throughout the city of Bellevue, where you have your higher end and the not so high end all mixed together. So thanks very much, and thanks for all the work that you do.
Thank you. Anybody else in the audience who would like to have If not, we'll keep moving on then. The next topic we have is comments by staff. And I think we have Ms. Byers, Mr. King, and Ms. Helen coming out to join us this evening. If I may, I want to just give some context. I will make a request of the commissioners that we use the time to ask points of clarification. We will certainly have time post the public hearing for the discussion and the study session. So if you would please use the time to ask any clarifying questions so we can move on to the public hearing as much as possible. Thank you. Over to you.
I'm taking the lead introducing the topic. First I'll introduce our team. To my left is Trish Byers, who's the co-development manager in the Development Services Department. Carol Helen, the Director of Land Use in the Development Services Department. Dan Stroh, the Interim Director of the Planning and Community Development Department. And Emil King, the Strategic Planning Manager for the Planning and Community Development Department. Good evening, Chair Davidos, Mayor Stokes, members of the Commission. I just want to say a few things about what we're here to speak about while we're getting the PowerPoint presentation up. I want to spend just a few minutes, and Dan will take this part, providing a little bit of context or background about what we are trying to accomplish collectively, the community, the council, the commission, with the Downtown Livability Initiative. We want to talk a bit about the journey, as you described it, Chair Davidos. It has been a journey that started back in 2013. It has involved a lot of people, a lot of time, a lot of energy, and a lot of very hard work by a number of people, as you've already recognized. It has been a lot of effort to get to this point tonight, which is really introducing to the public for public comment the draft code that you have worked on. The primary reason we're here this evening is for the public hearing and to hear from the community, hear from the stakeholders about the draft code that is in front of the commission as you're continuing your work leading to your recommendation to the city council. When we get to our presentation, hand it to planning commission staff. Jerry will walk through the process for the public hearing, and then obviously you can advance the community input. So with that, trying to keep our comments as brief as we can as we I want to walk through the draft code with you and again with the audience. I'll hand it to Dan, and you can provide a little bit of the context.
Well, thanks, Mike, and good evening. So this is the study area. In the white line there, it's the downtown sub-area that is the subject of the code update. It's bounded by Northeast 12th to the north. 100th Avenue there on the west side, I-405 on the east, and Main Street with some jog south is on the south border here. This area is about 410 acres or so, including the right-of-way. So the subject of the code amendments is that area. It's something like 2% of the overall city's land area, but of course the area that we expect to see the majority of our continued growth, both residential and non-residential, occur in. Where we are now in the process, of course, this is a milestone date of getting to the public hearing on this draft code package. There's been a lot of work to date, which I'll go into in a second. But generally speaking, we've been through a process of developing conceptually the idea of some changes to the code. The council got that work. The Planning Commission's been reviewing that for a while. And at this stage, we have assemble that into this draft code package where the Planning Commission ultimately will be coming out with recommendations for the council, which will then be forwarded to the council for the council's final adoption process. And in more detail, it looks a little bit like this. The council launched this with some principles to guide the effort, and we use those as kind of fog lines so we stay on track as we move forward through the process. Then we did what we call the land use code audit, kind of awkwardly named, but the purpose of that was to look at what have we achieved so far? How has the code been working since it was adopted back way back in 1981? The idea of building on success, figure out where it's worked well, where there's room for improvement. So that was a pretty formational piece. The Citizen Advisory Committee, the CAC, took that and developed recommendations out of that at a fairly broad level. Commissioner Lang was part of that process. And that was then sent, those recommendations from the CAC were then sent to the council, and the council initiated formally the code amendment process. in which we're engaged tonight. The commission has been through a number of items at a level of providing some initial direction. And as part of that process, as you were developing initial direction, there were some items that were leaned to further detail and became a set of what we call early wins, early items that could be adopted into the code. An example of that was a new requirement that every building provide weather protection in the Northwest here to make a more inviting pedestrian environment. Then we did additional work on one of the more complicated pieces of this whole code update, the amenity incentive system, which had to be quite a bit of economic work done in the analysis of how that system currently works and thinking about the update to that. And then a peer review process through the Urban Land Institute. All of that work then was essentially incorporated into the draft set of code amendments that we call the Downtown Livability Code Amendments Package, which is the subject of tonight's public hearing. And I'll say we're, of course, eager to get public comment on this. It's a formal review process, though there's been a lot of informal process as well, which I'll get into in a second. Once the commission actually gets this additional input, you'll be continuing your work on taking this and refining your recommendations on the code amendments and ultimately transmitting that to the council for the council's consideration and ultimately the council action. Public engagement, of course, key part of the process. We can never do enough, but we've tried to do a lot with this process. We have about approaching 1,400 persons on our email interest list. So we're able to continue to get information out to through that email process. We've had focus groups and walking tours and open houses at various parts of the process. We've done small group and one-on-one meetings with various stakeholders and interested parties. And then, of course, there have been a large number of CAC meetings and Planning Commission meetings where there's been opportunities in each of those for public comment. So, again, we can never do enough, most likely, but we've done a lot of work to try to get the word out and make sure that there's ongoing public involvement in this process. And at this point, it may be good to stop back and look at, so what are we really trying to achieve with updating the code? The Downtown Land Use Code, for the most part, was developed in 1981, so it's over 35 years old at this point. And it's a good thing to step back from time to time and make sure that we're still at the top of our game. There's very few things that haven't been reviewed in that kind of length of time, and especially something as important as the code that governs and that has a big impact on leveraging the billions of dollars of private investment that occur in the downtown. I'll say with that that in trying then to better bring that code up to date so we can better achieve the vision for downtown Bellevue as it's evolved, the theme is very much building on success. Because there's been a tremendous amount of success in this urban center. Downtown Bellevue is the envy of many cities. And so, again, the code audit and the process is trying to understand all the things that are working really well so we can build off of that success and take it to the next level and the level that we need going forward as a competitive and very livable environment for the 21st century. Part of this involves more and more the emphasis on the stronger, more vibrant pedestrian environment that's convenient, that's attractive, that really works for people on foot. An area that works better and better for our large and growing residential community. Downtown Bellevue is the fastest growing residential neighborhood in the city. It's approaching 14,000 residents. We want to make sure it works well for the residential community. As it's matured over these 35 years, it's also developed more distinctive neighborhoods. And so another objective here was to enhance the character of these different downtown neighborhoods so that we really develop that sense of place and that strong identity for different parts of the downtown and build on that growing identity that these different areas of the downtown city center have. And then another piece was there was a parallel effort in the transportation planning for this. And so this effort was also to make sure we incorporate the appropriate parts of what came out of that parallel effort called the Downtown Transportation Plan, because we do think about transportation and land use really as integrated elements these days. So those were some of the objectives we were trying to accomplish through the code update. And then I would say that the code update is part of a broader livability agenda for the downtown. There are a series of other things that have been happening, so the code update by no means is the start and end of the story. There's many other elements of livability that we also need to work. Some of these are bread and butter issues. Some of these are capital issues, things like the enhanced pedestrian crossings that we're working on our busy arterials. Some of these are very exciting projects like completing the downtown park and working on the vision for the Grand Connection, going all the way from the Maidenbower Bay waterfront through the heart of downtown across I-405. So some very fascinating and exciting parts that are other parts of this livability agenda that we're working on. And then things like the downtown policing squad. So there are many, many factors that can come into play with livability. The code update is part of that broader picture. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Carol Helen, our land use director. We have two departments here representing the overview tonight, as we're both heavily involved in this effort. So Development Services Department, Carol Helen.
So I'm just going to briefly
real quick question, Dan, and that is the 14,000 people live in downtown Bellevue, is that within the parameters?
Within that area that I just described, okay. The formal sub-area plan.
Thank you. Back to you, Kevin.
Certainly. So I'm going to actually hand this quickly off to Trish, just wanted to follow up on what Dan said, that the detail of the code essentially makes the reality of the vision in many cases. And we have worked hard with the Planning Commission to receive your direction and translate that into a code that we can apply over time to achieve the vision that the Planning Commission sees, the CAC sees, the Council sees for the downtown. So with that, I am going to ask Trish to walk us through the first elements of the code and some of the livability features that are incorporated.
So there are a couple of things that I wanted to mention before we get into the code. The first is that this PowerPoint will be on the Downtown Livability website for people to take a look at. And the page numbers that you'll see coming up will be in the footer of your packet or the packet that you see on the website. So you'll see the page numbers up there. They're not the packet page number, but the footer page number for the code. And when you look at it, you will understand. So here's the map of downtown again, but this is the zoning map, sort of the foundation for the code. You will see the zoning, and then the darker areas are what we call the perimeter overlay districts. The perimeter overlay districts create a sort of a gentle transition into the residential districts. And so the zoning might be a little more restrictive there just because we want to have a graceful transition into those residential districts. So we often get the question, so what do the tall buildings have to do with livability? What does all of this have to do with livability? We're going to talk today about how the code relates to livability. What you'll see on the bottom of the screen are code citations that directly relate to these things that we're talking about. I'm not going to go through the citations, but you can certainly go look at them later on if you're interested. The first factor of livability, we think, is walkability, something that we talked about just a little bit earlier. So a couple of things that have happened in this code is that we have improved the through-block connections, we have increased the width of the sidewalks on multiple streets, and we have improved pedestrian conditions on many of these, well, actually on all of the streets, so that they are more pedestrian-oriented. Another thing is, as far as livability is concerned, is neighborhood character. There is a map in your code that separates downtown into neighborhoods. And one of the things that we've done in this code with the amenity incentive system is we have proposed that in neighborhoods where, for instance, an outdoor plaza is more necessary or more needed, we have bumped up those amenity points a little bit. So you'll see, for instance, in Northwest Village, it's a little higher than it is in Ashwood. Another form of livability is how we address urban form. So urban form goes to things like when you're walking on the street, do you have access to light and air between the towers? Is there a variability of the built environment? Does the skyline give you, do you have memorability in your skyline? Are the building forms blocky, or do you have a homogeneous design, or is it something that's memorable and they're not blocky, you have slender towers? So all of those kinds of design issues, the light and air that we've been talking about, are all addressed in the code, and you can take a look at those code proposals as we've cited them there at the bottom of the screen.
I think these are important enough just to call out a couple with specificity because they've been really a part of the conversation at the CAC and the conversation that the Planning Commission has had that touches on tower setbacks, tower separation, how maximum floor plates essentially diminish as the towers get taller. We have outdoor plaza requirements. There's a whole range of code sections that really trigger this urban form and respond to this urban form characteristic to ensure that the code implements the vision of the CAC and Planning Commission and the Council.
With respect to neighborhood transitions, what we're talking about is graceful transitions, as I talked about earlier, with respect to those neighborhoods around the downtown. And we have those perimeter overlay districts that create that graceful transition. We also have a linear buffer that from the downtown boundary that is a landscape buffer of 20 feet. And also, something that you'll be taking a look at is those upper level step backs that are in the perimeter, and they are to create a situation where you don't just have a wall of building, but you actually have a step back so that you don't feel as though you're looking at a wall when you're in that adjacent neighborhood. And this is where Emil King takes over.
So we're going to talk a little bit about the amenity incentive system. This is a discrete section of the code in 070. It has significant changes from the existing amenity system. I think the stakeholders, council, commission, and staff have all learned a lot about the details that need to go in to successfully examine a 35-year-old incentive system, update it not only to have amenities that the city would like to have, but also really focus in on the feasibility of those amenities for development projects. So this has included the Commission Council joint workshop we had in November 2015 is being guided by a set of council principles specific just to the incentive system. Has had an enormous amount of economic analysis by BERT Consulting, staff review of that analysis, as well as third-party review by the ULI technical panel that just occurred in January. Some of the desired outcomes are really have amenities that make sense for downtown in 2017 moving forward, and have things that really will be true incentives for development and be feasible for them. So next slide, please. Just wanted to summarize the difference between development standards and guidelines that do pertain to all development, as well as what the incentive system is intended to do. So the way the code is structured, we do have overall development standards for things like floor plates, having weather protection, as Dan stated, things like landscaping, also a whole set of design guidelines that we've spent significant time trying to consolidate and streamline. Those pertain to all development in the downtown. The way the proposal is, if development would like to go above and beyond those base heights or FARs, then they would be participating in the incentive system. As Trish pointed out, the commission spent considerable time looking at areas where additional height or FAR may be warranted, so those clearly would be tied to the incentive system. Next one. This is the list of the 18 amenities. We've consolidated some of them into single bullets, so it's not going to add up to 18 bullets, but we essentially have a list in the draft code of 18 amenities. These were, some of them are amenities that we have in the current system, things like the Ped Corridor, Outdoor Plaza, and then we do have a number of new things that came out not only of the CAC process back when that was in action, but it also was vetted through the Planning Commission. So things like enhanced streetscapes going above and beyond what the standard width and treatment would be for sidewalks. things like alleys with addresses, trying to have that actually be implemented in certain parts of downtown. Things like freestanding canopies as well, things not on our current amenity list. And then importantly, it's good to point out the last one there on the right-hand column, the flexible amenity, was a key part of the discussion that if for some reason there's something that's not on the amenity list, a developer would be able to propose something, take it through a process, and have an appropriate bonus for something that they would propose. So the flexible amenity is very important. The way the code is structured, we are focusing heavily on the open space public realm. So you'll see in the code that 75% of points are supposed to be earned through that site as opposed to 25%. And we've also added optional fee and lieu provisions that aren't in the code right now. So if the developer wants to do a fee and lieu instead of on-site performance, that is an option. The next topic I want to talk briefly about is station area planning. So the downtown CAC and our planning commission has really functioned as the station area planning effort for downtown Bellevue. So unlike South Bellevue or East Main, where we had separate efforts on those, we are doing our station area planning effort for downtown Bellevue right now. It is important to point out that essentially all of Bellevue does have transit supportive densities and uses and vision as it stands. But what we did was really tried to focus in with the CAC and the commission on what things can we do in and around the Northeast 6th Street station there that you see in the middle of that map, as well as the portion of downtown Bellevue that would be using the East Main station that Carol's pointing to down there. While the station lies just outside of downtown, we feel like a lot of people will be walking from that area to the station. So we looked at things like upgrading sidewalks and the pedestrian roam around those areas. We did look at substantial density and height increases that you can see in the red circled areas for the OLB and the Civic Center. And we also looked at better connecting our pedestrian corridor and existing bus transit center to the Northeast 6th station, especially. So our body of work on livability does cover what we feel are all important parameters of stationary planning. So with that, I'm going to hand it back over to Ms. Helen to continue on.
So I'm just going to quickly orient you to the balance of the neighborhood livability features that are contained in the land use code. One of them that is new to the land use code is the green and sustainability features. We've historically had landscape features. Those were actually bumped up as part of the early wins, where we essentially provided additional detail on planters and tree pits and things like that that you did last year. This goes on essentially to include the green and sustainability factors and additional amenities, for instance, for the enhanced streetscape and the design guidelines that essentially focus on greening Bellevue. With respect to the mixed-use downtown provisions, we did note that we were trying to accommodate a broader range of uses and be more flexible about the uses that were anticipated. Our land use code tends to peg uses very specifically, and we know that urban uses actually may have a more may essentially trend in different directions, and we don't want our code to be so inflexible that we can't capture those trends. For incidents, we've seen in Seattle the rising of doggy daycares, which actually provide very interesting and unique viewing experience from the sidewalk. We also were wanting to level the playing field with respect to residential and non-residential uses in the MU. So those features are in our land use code. They're in our land use classification provisions, in our use charts, and in the dimensional charts. With regard to affordable housing, as you all know, that's a section that's reserved right now in our land use code. We are, as a city, looking for opportunities to promote affordable housing for a broad range of populations. The things that we've heard as ideas is the proposal would include up to one FAR of exemption, for instance, to accommodate FAR or to accommodate affordable housing. That's not currently in the land use code, but would be essentially added based on recommendations that are ultimately received from the citywide affordable housing strategy. With regard to flexibility and departures, we heard this throughout the CAC process that the code needed to be more flexible. We needed to be able to be nimble to incorporate
architectural design and departures that were contemplated by the code. That the code shouldn't be a barrier, it should foster the unique and high quality design. At the same time, it should be transparent enough that people kind of understand what they're going to, what the outcomes are going to be. So there's a range of departures. Some are administrative, which means they're provided by the department director. Others are city council departures that require really a development agreement and some additional thought and analysis. And then there's the flexible amenity that I think Emil spoke to just briefly, that coming in with a package of amenities that you might show as a nexus to the project that you are proposing. Height and form is one of the last topics. We do want to incent more slender buildings. Light and air was a objective, as Trish mentioned earlier in her presentation. And we want to foster distinctive architecture and memorable skyline. These amenities in this area to achieve taller buildings had that livability premise that in getting taller buildings, more slender buildings, we would have more opportunity to increase tower separation, we would have more opportunity to accommodate outdoor plaza space at the ground level. So just in wrapping up here this evening, the Planning Commission at their last meeting did talk about some key topics that are of interest to them, hearing from folks this evening, and as we move forward, that these will be issues that are of utmost importance to be resolved. This is not the whole list of issues that you have talked about over the course of the last 2 years, because there have been many. But these are ones that are outstanding. The calculation of base FARs and base heights, scope of administrative approvals. There's been mention of a super bonus that would increase height and FAR. The timing for inclusion of affordable housing exemption, whether it should be now, whether it should be later. Tower separation and tower setbacks has been an issue that's come up by several developers as they've come in and shared their visions for their projects with us. That's created a potential friction point with the code that they'd like the Planning Commission to explore. I think, as Emil noted earlier, we've talked about the exchange rate for the in-lieu fee payments for amenities. There is a differentiation between the amenity rate and the fee in lieu rate at this point in time to encourage people to do those amenities on site. And then we've talked a bit about administrative modification of parking ratios. The other topics, there were some site-specific ones that have been included. These were in the original staff report. They actually gave rise to some of the broader, more general concepts that the Planning Commission brought up. But maximum height limits, specifically in downtown O2 South, so things that could have view blockage ramifications, the OLB FAR increases, the B2 height increases above the maximum through a council departure. We've heard that from the Fortress project. Appropriate code provisions for A3, B3, that's that area down by the East Main Station. We've heard some creative ideas for the appropriate code provisions for that site. And then some ownership issues with regard to 100 First Avenue. Next steps, I'm going to turn this over to Dan for closing remarks.
So quick wrap. Tonight is a really key step in this ongoing public involvement process. So we're very eager to hear in the public hearing tonight, in this formal hearing. What's going to happen next is we expect that the Planning Commission is going to continue their deliberations. You're going to be taking in this input, digesting it, considering how you want to incorporate what you hear tonight into your thinking. And there'll be follow-up study sessions. The next study session after tonight will be March 22nd. We have a target date for conclusion of the Commission's effort because we realize it's going to take multiple study sessions. So as a target date, we put out there the end of April, if you're ready at that point. And then, of course, once the Commission has completed your work and your recommendations to the Council will then get that from the Commission and begin their review of the recommended code package from the Commission and their adoption process. And, of course, the Council is the body that will take final action on any code amendments. So with that, we would be asking Terry Cullen to provide some kind of queuing steps for the public hearing itself.
Okay.
Thank you, Dan. If I could just quickly, I do want to make sure we have some time for the commissioners to ask clarifying questions, if we may. So just Commissioner Hillhouse, please.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. It was actually an excellent summary of the last year and a half of what we've been covering. I do have one question along the lines of amenities. It's an amenity that I had asked initially at the Joint Council Commission session in 2015 and last year as well, when we specifically covered amenities, and that is an amenity be listed that could provide a function such as a fire station or another a city official function or something like that. It was prior, of course, to the current land use for Fire Station 10 that we're talking about, but I was wondering why perhaps that did not get included as amenity, because everyone seemed fairly amenable to the idea. So I guess that's my first question, that I wonder if that could be considered a flexible amenity going forward. So, question.
So, Emil or I could probably speak to this, but the flexible amenity was intended to capture your idea. It was really that big thing that we can't imagine, the big play that somebody might want to bring forward, a public donation of land. Schools have come up as an option, fire stations. That is exactly what the flexible amenity is intended. And we didn't put any particular examples there because we didn't want to limit people's creativity in thinking about what they might essentially propose.
Okay, that helps. Thank you.
Thank you. If I may just throw on the table, any other questions, points of clarification? If not, we'll do it back to you, Mr. Cullen.
All right, then. Thank you, Chairman. Good evening, everyone. My name is Terry Cullen. I'm with the City of Bellevue staff. I'm the staff liaison to the Planning Commission. I'd like to say welcome to everyone here tonight. This has been a long road. This started back in June of 2015, the Land Use Code Amendment process. So it's been almost 2 years in the making. Tonight is about you, the people and the public. It's not so much about the Planning Commissioner's staff. It is about you, and that's what a public hearing is all about. We're here tonight to hear you and what you have to say. That the Planning Commission wants everyone to be heard that wishes to speak. And in order to make that happen, and there's so many of you out there, and we do want to hear that, is as you come up to the podium to speak or to the speaker's table, it's best to state your comments, state your interest in the code amendments that are being heard tonight. Try not to engage the Planning Commission in debate or ask questions, because that will make it challenging to get through. And it, once again, it is about you and getting your comments on the record. The Planning Commission will hold study sessions to deliberate on what you tell them tonight and on the testimony that you provide. It does show in the agenda that there is a study session following tonight's public hearing. It's very likely that's going to actually start at the next meeting, which will be March the 22nd. So that's the next meeting of the Planning Commission, and that's the only thing they're going to have on their agenda that night, is discussion of the Downtown Livability Code Amendment and deliberating on the testimony that you provided tonight. We also have another date set up, and that is April the 12th. So if you're following this code, these code amendments, please note that. It will also be up on the website for the Planning Commission. Both of those meetings start at 6:30, and they'll be in this room, and you will be allowed an opportunity to comment. So a couple of housekeeping items. There's a number of people that may have never addressed the Planning Commission before. When you come up to the speaker table, don't be shy. There is a timer box there, and there are three lights on that timer box, red, yellow, and green. When the light is green, you're good to go. You'll have 5 minutes per person to speak. When it turns yellow, you'll have 1 minute remaining. We ask you to wrap it up, and when it turns red, your time will be up. And the chairman, at his choice, may interrupt you at that point and ask you to close. Please state your name and address clearly into the microphone. I can't emphasize how important that is, so that we have this as part of the record. We have a recording secretary here tonight, and she needs to hear that to be part of the record. Always address your comments into the microphone. If you leave the speaker's table to point at a display, should there be one, or the recording secretary cannot pick up your comments. I do have a wireless mic available if you should need to get up and point to something, such as up on the screen. And that's also for the planning commissioners, too. And or if you have accessibility issues and you can't make it to the speaker's table, I can bring a wireless mic to you. If you have an audio or visual presentation you wish to run through the laptop up here, please allow me to help you to put that on the laptop. I need to get a copy of that for the public hearing record. I will also require a copy of any paper that you hand out to the Planning Commission, so please be sure I get one copy, or any physical objects that you might be bringing up to be part of your testimony. And finally, with respect to correspondence, thank you very much for sending in, for those that sent in email. What we did is that typically for the Planning Commission's meeting, anything that we received up to last week when we sent out the packet to the Planning Commission got included in the packet. Anything you emailed from that point on up till noon today got actually sent to the Planning Commission digitally and copied in, by paper and put in front of them tonight. Now, should you have sent something past 12 noon today to us, that will be picked up and put in the Planning Commission's packet for the next meeting on March the 22nd. They will get to see it. So I want to thank you for your comments. Chairman Dobbins, concludes my comments.
Thank you very much. Thank you. So we have two sheets of people signed in. I believe there are more sheets there as well. So if you haven't signed up, please do take the time. Mr. Cullen, are we good to go? Shall I just go through the list? All right, thank you.
Do we need a vote?
Thank you. Do we have a motion to open the public hearing? We have a second.
We have a second.
Motion to open the hearing, yes.
All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Thank you. Thank you, Michelle. Appreciate it. I want to just apologize up front if I mispronounce your last name. Please bear with me. There's about 38 people in here with various styles of writing. Mr. Brian Brand.
Good evening, Chair Davidos and Mayor Stokes, who's not here right now, and other members of the commission. My name is Brian Brand, and I am here as representing the Bellevue Downtown Association. I am the co-chair, along with Warren Coons, for the Bellevue Downtown Association Land Use and Livability Committee. I'm also one of the partners with Bales Architects. We are celebrating this month our 45th year in Bellevue as an architectural firm. And during that 45 years, we've worked on many projects in Bellevue and in the downtown. Also speaking with me tonight will be Patrick Bannon. He is the president of the Bellevue Downtown Association. First of all, we would like to acknowledge the excellent progress made by specifically the commission, the council, the staff, and the CAC in getting us to where we are tonight. We think it's fantastic, and we think that the work has been great. This has been a critical update. As mentioned by Dan, it has been 35 years since this code was written, and it's due for an update. So the draft code is almost there, and we definitely think it's headed in the right direction. Our members have been engaged throughout this process, through our committee, in the whole process, and followed it from the beginning. The update to this code is critical in shaping a strong, healthy, and livable city. The BDA has been a longtime partner in creating a vibrant downtown. Many of you know we are involved in many activities, including the Magic Season, Skating Rink, Jazz Festival, and other events that we think help create a livable city. The draft code, as I mentioned, is almost there, and it's heading in the right direction. We have received consensus from our committee members and our members in several key recommendations that we would like to recommend be added to the code. Patrick will present these recommendations in a moment. We urge adoption of these recommendations by the Planning Commission and in their transmittal to the City Council later this year. Overall, we've emphasized a targeted increase in heights to encourage thinner towers and inspire distinctive and memorable architecture and more light and air and less bulk around buildings. Additional flexibility and improved guidelines and updated code tools will help create a better code. Except for a few targeted areas where we want to encourage additional density, the maximum FAR or density in the city, in the districts in the city, will remain unchanged. We believe this code will encourage better design with clear guidelines and better standards. We think this new code will achieve high quality design and development that responds to the market and anticipates the community's needs. We think this new code will attract and enable the city's most intense development in the downtown core. Ultimately, the updated code will help guide where and how growth will occur consistent with the existing policies in the city. It's important to refresh the city's playbook for development and create a vibrant and thriving downtown. We urge adoption of the recommendations that Patrick will present tonight. Thank you again for all your time, your leadership, and your commitment to this process.
Thank you. We have Mr. Patrick Bannon up next.
Good evening, Chair Devedos and members of the Commission, Mayor Stokes. My name is Patrick Bannon. I serve as President of the Bellevue Downtown Association. The BDA has been in the community, working in the community for the past 43 years. Our mission is to strengthen the economic and cultural vitality of downtown Bellevue. And thank you tonight for hearing and for listening. So I am going to bring forward a list that is very similar to the list that I shared last week with the Commission. There are a couple of clarifications and additions that I wanted to note, and then I'll just mention a couple of the other items that come in this package. So first off, I'll go through the 9 core recommendations from the BDA, and again, some of these are broader themes that we have engaged our members on, those who have been very closely engaged on this. As you can imagine, finding consensus can be challenging given the level of complexity and detail in the code. So we're focusing on those areas where we have achieved consensus from our member committee. First off, we are looking at the relationship of our basic FARs and maximum FARs in the code and the relationship of those FARs and heights to the amenity incentive system. And so we've reached consensus agreement. It's setting the base FARs and heights at 90% of the new maximum FAR and heights in downtown. Provides a consistent, uniform, and predictable standard across the districts. Second, we would encourage administrative approval of flexible amenity number 18, as mentioned earlier, within the maximum height and FAR. Related to it, number 3 would encourage an option for a project to apply for a super bonus of additional FAR height beyond the maximum through a council departure or development agreement. And so that would, of course, require an extraordinary or significant public amenity. And we listed a recommended additional super bonus no greater than 1 FAR. Related to affordable housing, we would strongly encourage the Commission to recommend or seek council direction to advance the affordable housing exemption into the land use code package for consideration. Additionally, as we look at the A perimeter, we know there's been considerable thought to the A perimeter related to proximity to the single-family residential neighborhoods, we feel that there is additional opportunity around height flexibility, specifically allowing up to 70 feet within the A1 perimeter in certain areas so that the housing can actually be achieved within a given height. Around tower setbacks and the setback requirement from the internal property lines, we recommend removing that 40-foot setback requirement from the internal property lines and keep the standard at 20 feet. And we would recommend reducing the fee in lieu exchange rate from currently proposed to $28 to $25 and benchmark that performance of the exchange rate adjusted over time as the market evolves. So what I didn't mention last week, and which we wanted to ensure was captured in these core recommendations, is number 8 and 9. And number 8 would recommends a thorough transportation study, a review of how the downtown land use code amendment changes would affect the transportation network. I understand there has been screening and analysis that has been done. We would recommend a thorough treatment of a transportation study to ensure there is some good understanding of if and how changes would affect the network. And then 9, we noted a couple four process improvements, and one of them is to memorialize an expectation that we come back to the code within a 5-year time frame. We would ask to incorporate additional process flexibility around the 8-foot tower separation, and we included a note around the city's design review process to include digital street views. Additional concepts that have been brought forward by the committee for further study include looking at density around light rail stations, as well as looking at reducing potentially parking ratios around light rail stations for residential uses. And then the rest of the package, we have 2 pages of additional comments, critiques, and clarification needs that have come up from our member committee process. We encourage a review of those. And above all, we thank you for your persistence and continued investigation of how to make this code work well for the city.
Thank you. I think we have a couple of questions. Commissioner Carlson, please.
Thank you, Chairman Davidoff. We have a lot of people lined up to speak, so this will be real quick. Patrick, on number 1, set the base FARs and heights at 90% of the new maximums, which I think a lot of us are in sympathy with. The justification is it establishes clear, consistent, predictable standards. And yet, here on number 3, it's provide an option for a project to get a super bonus of additional FAR through a council departure process, which I guess would sweep aside number 1. Can you give me an example of number 3?
Of what would qualify for a bonus?
Yeah.
A super bonus.
Go and get a super.
Well,
what do you envision as a project that would qualify for a super bonus?
It's a good question, right? So what we're clarifying here is that if an applicant wanted to encumber themselves with a council departure process and work through a development agreement in consideration for an extraordinary amenity, whatever that might be, it could be a significant public open space. It could be an item from the existing list or something we haven't imagined. That process then would be available to the applicant seek that council departure and receive up to a 1 FAR super bonus on their site.
Okay, but doesn't that operate across purposes with having a really predictable, consistent set of standards guiding our downtown development?
Well, we have continued to press on both sides. So one would be to, again, provide predictable paths for those who want to stick to the predictable path, and then for an extra opportunity for flexibility that would go beyond that predictable path to give them that opportunity to seek a creative option that would then be rewarded with additional bonuses.
Can you think of an example anywhere where this super bonus comes into play?
Super bonuses in other markets have been applied for affordable housing. I would have to look to find other examples. There are a few markets that I'm aware of that do have a super bonus provision. I believe our code, and this could bear further clarification around a super bonus on a pedestrian corridor, a potential super bonus could be related to the Grand Connection as well.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Could I ask one more question?
Number eight, you talk about a cross-patient study. Am I to infer that you believe we haven't done this thoroughly yet?
Well, I think that what we're reflecting is that we want, and I think the community will want, additional confidence that changes that are incorporated as part of the land use code amendment, that we have full and clear understanding of what potential impacts and implications may be. And the existing study may show, you know, a similar result, but we want to ensure that the study is done so that whatever land use code changes are made in the next iteration and update of the downtown transportation plan, they're fully understood and we're able to plan effectively for those.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Next, we have Mr. Robert Wallace.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner. My name is Bob Wallace. I'm almost 50-year resident of the city of Bellevue. My address is P.O. Box 4184, Bellevue 98009. I'm the managing partner of entities that own 10 parcels in downtown Bellevue in this area, primarily in the CBD, MU, and OLB districts. We have taken in fact, I want to commend you on what a volume of work, just based on the amount of time it has taken us to even pretend to understand it. yeoman service. And rather than bore you with my recitation, I prepared a letter, a very short letter, that summarizes our concerns, and they're relatively few. Most of this we think is terrific. We generally agree with the BDA's suggestions as well. But there are a few that are somewhat troubling, and there are a couple that, in at least our case, in the case of similar properties, probably would preclude the kind of development that you and we envision, especially with respect to smaller sites and whatnot. So, as I say, we would commend this letter to you and not bore you by reading it to you, but again, commend you for the tremendous amount of work you've done and hope that that we can bring this to a timely conclusion, because frankly there are a lot of people that are sort of have delayed projects for years in anticipation of this day. And the only other comment I'd make is somebody suggested that we should review this every 5 years, and I think we should have probably started on the next review about 3 years ago.
Thank you, sir.
So moved.
We have Mr. Jim Hill up next.
Good evening, Chairman Davidoff, Mayor Stokes, members of the Commission. My name is Jim Hill, and I represent Kemper Development Company. My address is 575 Bellevue Square. I'm just here tonight to follow up and on some of the things, mostly that Patrick said. I am a member of the BDA Livability Committee, and do support the changes and the updates that Patrick referred to earlier this evening. As most of the other speakers have said, I want to thank you also for the extraordinary amount of time and effort and energy you've put in over the last years on this project. It has been nothing less than spectacular, and your dedication is noted by many in this community, and we really thank you for that. First of all, I'd like to take a minute to endorse some of the BDA recommendations for the Downtown Land Use Code Amendment, specifically noting just a couple of things. Setting the new base FAR and heights at 90% of the new maximums, I think, is a very important step and a good way to go in light of this new effort. Secondly, removal of the proposed 40-foot setback requirements from the internal property line. keeping the 25 feet to support feasibility on smaller projects around downtown. It's also, I think, critically important as we move forward. Also, I'd like to suggest that we add more flexibility for tower spacing requirements. The proposed 80-foot limit will severely, or spacing will severely limit feasibility on many of the sites that are currently proposing development in downtown Bellevue. I'd also like to support Patrick, Chairman Davidoff's idea of the transportation study. I think that's very important. One of the tenets of this city has always been to, you know, build and maintain appropriate infrastructure as development has happened in the downtown. I think understanding the transportation elements and requirements to meet the demand of the increasing trip capacity, residents and workers in downtown Bellevue is a great idea and very important to do. And also add just one other item to that too. While we're at it, I think a parking study, an additional parking study would be very important before we start talking about reduced parking ratios in downtown Bellevue. I've got four other little things I want to just kind of drill down into that others have not done yet, and I hope I don't bore you here. The first one I want to do is talk about the pedestrian corridor standards. You know, we have several properties along the pedestrian corridor and are happy to be participating in the ideas for the Grand Connection. It's very nice. However, we must not create arbitrary or unnecessary burden to development along this corridor. The current stand, one of the things that stood out to me is the current standard states the corridor shall average 60 feet and in no case be less than 40 feet. 60 feet is the equivalent of 5 highway lanes in width. Now, I think we're, I'm not sure how many people were expecting on the pedestrian corridor. However, I think that seems a little ambitious to think about something of that size. We also must have standards that are not open to uncertainty and arbitrary decision-making. You know, I've heard discussions of exceptional artwork, unique colors and textures, water features, special recreational features. It all sounds very good. However, as a developer and a builder, it's potentially hard to design to with that amount of flexibility. And everybody has a different idea of what an elephant looks like depending on what you're holding on to at the time. Also, I want to just continue to encourage, you know, outdoor dining and cafe spaces along that pedestrian corridor. For years, that was talked about regularly and something that we took very seriously and asked some of our tenants to provide there in downtown Bellevue. It's on a nice sunny day that it is utilized extensively and is terrific. Uh-oh, I'm going to hurry up here. Sorry. And but now it seems like that is somewhat being discouraged, so I apologize for time just about being up. The other thing I want to talk about is sidewalk widths and through block pedestrian crossings, but I can do that at the next meeting, Mr. Chairman, if that would be better for your time.
Certainly, that would be appreciated. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thanks, Eva.
Yes, sir.
In response to your statement about artwork being subject to arbitrary decision making, what would you recommend as an alternative?
You know what? I think, Mr. Barksdale, the idea is we can all live with certainty and predictability. And I think what we run into problems is, you know, when you talk about an open-ended idea of, you know, a piece of significant art, what that means to me or to Chairman or to Member Carlson or to you might be very different. And we've been in cases, you know, with city staff where we're kind of having a lot of discussion and debate about what is significant and what is art and what's not. And so I just think just something that can provide additional predictability in that case is important. For it's nice to have the flexibility on one hand, but again, finding a way to get to predictability is important as well.
Thank you, sir.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
It was Todd Woosley up next.
Good evening, Mr. Chair, members of the Commission, and Mayor. For the record, my name is Todd Woosley. I live at 10633 Southeast 20th Street here in Bellevue, 98004. That's in the Anatine neighborhood. And I also serve on the City's Transportation Commission, but I'm here on my own volition tonight. To echo the comments previously, thank you for all the work you've done. You put in a tremendous amount of time on something that's long overdue and is critically important to the City of Bellevue. You know, Bellevue Central Business District is a remarkable place. I remember when we came up with a concept, and it's seen in the last several development cycles over the last few decades. It's about halfway built out. It gets nicer and nicer every time. It's become a more livable place than ever before, and looks to be even more livable in the future. So I encourage the Commission to adopt anything that has to do with livability other than increases in densities as soon as possible. But I am concerned about the lack of understanding we have about the impacts on a transportation system from any increases in density, let alone actually from the current zone densities. We simply do not know what the power system is going to function at the full build-out of either the current zone densities or the proposed increased zone densities. So I'm pleased to hear the BDA and others speak about the need for a full traffic study. The traffic study that has been done shows a snapshot of what it might be like in 2030. And that shows market rate development. And it might be misinterpreted to say that if we increase densities, traffic's going to get better. But regardless, we're going to have more and more trips. That study shows it'll take twice as long to get through downtown as it does right now with PM peak, and there's still a lot more development to go. So we need to, you know, you've seen me before, I'm promoting more densities. The traffic engineer told me once that developers, if you give them an ounce of capacity, they'll take a pound of density. And I think maybe we ought to have more of an equal ratio where we have a pound-to-pound ratio. And we have the capacity for our system. It's important not only for economic vitality and quality of life and be able to get to it, you know, here on time or show on time, but it's also the city's looking at investing in a new fire station. One of the key criteria are the response times. And so we ought to include the impacts on the response times for all of our emergency service providers in this traffic analysis prior to making any changes to the density and that would result in even more delay in our intersections. It is a life safety issue. And finally, you know, downtown is less than 3% of the city's own landmass, and there is a lot of other non-single-family neighborhood areas in Bellevue that are perfectly capable of accommodating growth, and we can grow graciously by allowing those areas also to accommodate the growth in housing and jobs and retail. Far lower densities. I don't think there's any risk that downtown Bellevue won't always be the focal point and the highest, most dense land uses in the city. But from Belrad to Wilburton, Eastgate to Crossroads, there's opportunities there. So the same type of analysis that's been done to look at the feasibility of what's necessary to incent the type of development we envision to accommodate the growth we have, while having a transportation system that serves the trips. I hope we continue this process and look forward to Bellevue becoming even more livable. Thank you.
Thank you. I think we have one question for you. Yeah. Commissioner Carlson, please.
Thank you. Mr. Woosley, if I'm hearing you right, are you suggesting, I saw a lot of heads nodding when you made that point in front of the audience, that we would be better off holding off on a recommendation of building heights until the traffic analysis, perhaps with the parking component, is completed?
My recommendation wasn't about heights, but it's about densities. If something is taller or skinnier for the same FAR, I assume it's going to have the same trip generation as it currently does. But if we equalize things, and that there's another two 0.0 FAR for office, then that's going to be trip generation for PMP because those employees leave other areas. I don't know the answer, but I'm just suggesting that we should have that information to make a more informed decision before we move forward, because you can't put the genie back in the bottle. Mm-hmm. If we do this, other people have that expectation, and then we put ourselves in a very awkward situation of perhaps failing to meet concurrency and effectively having to downzone the parcel owners of properties that have been redeveloped. So I think it would be in Bellevue's best interest to have a thorough understanding of the capacity of our system and full build-out of both the current densities and future proposed densities.
And secondly, your family's lived here forever. Where in Bellevue would you like to see more growth happen?
Well, I mentioned the neighborhoods, and they're in my letter as well. If we see Bel-Red, you know, the Spring District, you have a 100,000 square foot GIX, a brew pub in areas that were envisioned to be transit-oriented densities. We have out in Eastgate, as you know, a challenged with the code. There, all of those areas where we could perhaps distribute growth, handle it more graciously. Services would also be a little closer to the residences. They could come and go without having to come to downtown if they needed a service or a restaurant.
Now, which has been planned for. I'm just wondering if there was an additional area that hasn't been in.
I'm more suggesting that the kind of thorough analysis on the economic viability of the code provisions be done in those areas so that they also, it makes sense for the market to build what's envisioned in the code.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
We have Mr. Dave Meisner up next.
Good evening, Chair Devedos, the Commission, Mr. Mayor, and members of the Council. My name is Dave Meisner. My address is 16541 Redmond Way, Redmond, Washington. I'm here to express my support for leaving the tower spacing as is at the 20-foot distance. As you recall, we shared our plans for a revised project at the Connor Building under the proposed new downtown code. Ultimately, we decided to move forward under the current code given the uncertainty and timing of the code adoption. Even though we're moving forward under the current code, I'm here to encourage you to maintain the 20-foot setback distance. The issues of light and air are addressed through the International Building Code, and mandating a setback beyond this distance significantly compromises future development. We hear a lot of concerns about affordability, tweaks and changes that make FAR more expensive, ultimately make things less affordable, not more affordable. I want to thank you for your time and commitment to Bellevue, updating the code in a way that is consistent with the shared vision. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Andrew Miller up next, please. And Mr. McBride.
Yes. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Andrew Miller. I'm with BDR Homes, BDR Capital Partners. Our office and our property is at 11100 Main Street, which is the northwest corner of Main and 112. And tonight I'm joined by
Bill McBride, representing the property at 11040 Main Street.
We want to, as everybody, we've known this has been a long journey, so thank you for your time and perseverance. I'm impressed with the stamina of the planning commission. It pains me a little bit, but BDR would like to express with our great disappointment that we do not support the current proposed code. At our corner of downtown, there's a lot of changes going on. We are gateway intersection, we're a front door property. We have the OLB getting taller on the same corner, same intersection that we're on. We have the Wheat property going about the same thing. We have the park on the other corner. and the R corner, it's still not addressed in the current code proposal. But worse yet, I actually feel that the code as presented breeds mediocrity and mediocre design solutions to a light rail station. Bellevue shouldn't settle and deserves better. I wanted to share something. As I prepared for this meeting, I went back to the Downtown Livability Initiative, and I looked at my notes that were written 2 years ago today. There are on pages 41 and 42, 43, three whole pages dedicated to a light rail station. It just happens to be a central one here at City Hall. And you would have to look very hard to find any reference to the other light rail station that affects downtown. It's found in a half a sentence on page 42. And so that began my journey of trying to correct a wrong. That light rail station, the East Main Light Rail Station, will affect downtown Bellevue. I don't want to spend our time talking about the many things that we don't think are quite right in the code, the 40-foot tower setback, the 20-foot buffers on our property that are for reasons that no longer exist, specific uses and heights with rationale that no longer exist, a code and incentive system that assumes everything's flat in Bellevue, which it's not, and a bit of a baffling incentive system that's going to make projects harder. Now, there have been other people talking this evening that have good solutions, and there'll be others after us, so I will let them do the talking on that. We, BDR and John L. Scott, feel like we put in an extraordinary effort to show you a vision of the future. And in the handout, you'll find the images that you've seen for the last year and a half. I believe those are pages 5 and 6. And what we proposed was a stepped project, traditional planning, a welcoming grand stairway, a grand concourse to bring pedestrians in the morning and see you off at the end of the night, something that really fit the context of what we presented and the future of Bellevue. But the code, as currently written, is kind of pointing us towards squatty wood frame structures that really become buttresses against the street and really don't let you in. I've recently heard them referred to maybe as Ballard boxes, and I don't think that's what we want. This was supposed to be a no-brainer, and I'm shocked that I'm sitting here tonight with a code that doesn't allow us to bring a great, responsive vision to Bellevue. You guys can still save the day. We're happy to meet with Bellevue staff. We have done so. We've shared our concerns about certain specific code sections, but in reality, we can't do anything about it. They won't change the code because we asked. The only group that can change the code at this point, is my understanding, is the Planning Commission. Now, to that end, your package tonight includes our proposed code changes with rationale, so you can understand why I want to change them. But at the end of the day, we think that the Planning Commission and our two properties, I think we came to the conclusion last May that this was a better vision for Bellevue. And I think we all expected to see that come through code. So the fact that it's not in code, the only way we're going to get it there is through Planning Commission. So I'll finish my comments, turn it over to Phil. But this is the first code rewrite in 30-some years. But yet it's still hamstrung by precedent in East Main. These are the very shackles you're trying to throw off. And we're not supposed to be inching our way out of the past. We're supposed to be leaping into the future. And the code just doesn't do that yet. And if we're not going to leap into the future, what was all this work for the last 4 years all about? The East Main area deserves to be part of the future of Bellevue, and the light rail station across the street from us has changed everything. What you can do for us and for a better Bellevue is help us get that code rewritten before this is all said and done.
Great. Okay. So I represent the owners of Bellevue Main LLC, which is the building there. It happens to house John L. Scott, who celebrated our 85th year in third generation family-owned company. We've got 200 employees in that building, and we're busting out at the seams. You know, we need more space. This project was a vision that was going to take us there. I was reminded earlier tonight that this has been an 18-month journey. Oh, my goodness. you know, Andrew kind of beat me to the punch. He was reading my notes. I commend your endurance and your persistence through this whole thing. And so, you know, it goes without saying, we've got a last number I saw was $3.7 billion taxpayer investment that's going to stop right in front of our building. And if we don't address that, recognize that, I mean, I think we're missing things. You'll, when you go through the code changes that we recommend, you'll see most of them reference, you know, a quarter of a mile, 1,300 yards from a light rail station. So we're not saying make these for any other reason other than transit-oriented development. We've got to respond. We've got to bring. We've got to boost ridership to that light rail station, or it's for naught. We'll have to answer to the taxpayers. We provided the vision, it was 18 months ago. That is not a cheap project to build. It was inspirational. It was a project that we were all excited about. And we've got restrictions on the property because of the elevation changes, but we are offering a lot of public amenities, including a through-block connector and a walk corridor and amenities for the neighborhood. Andrew and I have we've been here many times. We've had public conversations. We've had many, many private conversations. In every one of those conversations, we've never heard no. In fact, all we've heard is encouragement to keep on going, keep on going. And here we are. We provide mock-ups, again, code changes, and no one's marked up our code changes or said no or anything. So we are disappointed that the code is written doesn't reflect a project that we can build. You know, the response to the code as written is going to be a 5-over-2 building, and that's not what Bellevue needs. We need something more inspiring. So we ask, here's the ask. Ask the Planning Commission to instruct the staff to include our code changes. That's it.
As simple as that, isn't it?
Thank you very much.
Just pause for a second. Any questions across the table? Well, in that case, then thank you very much.
You got it.
Mr. Alex Smith up next, please.
Good evening, Chair Davidos.
Okay, well, I will be talk slow since I want to cue this up.
And Mayor Stokes, other members of the Planning Commission, and the supporting staff here this evening. We came up here, all three of us together, were signed up concurrently, that I thought, for efficiency's sake, I would take care of the greetings, so you will be thanked by the others. I'll do that for all three of us. Thank you again for your diligence and getting us to the point. And also wish to extend those thank yous to the Planning Department and other supporting staff at the City of Bellevue, especially for including a good summation in our agenda materials this evening of all the comments that we've been and other presentations that we've been making over the last several months. The purpose of my comments tonight essentially are to support the BDA recommendations 1 through 9. Again, we'll see what that transportation study suggests in yields down the road, but I do want to support the BDA's work. They've been a great partner and a great example for me as a private landowner. Oh, I almost forgot. My address is 700-112 Avenue Northeast, and I'm here representing 700-112 LLC. And to my left is Jeff Taylor of Caldoun Consulting. Anyway, Jeff will introduce himself. He's had extensive experience in Bellevue development. And then our land use attorney, Larry Martin with Davis Wright Trumaine. So I don't want to take too much time myself. They have much more concise information to share with you. Many of the supporting materials are in your packet. If they're not there already, they'll be there forthcoming. They were submitted today. And the essential elements that I'll just briefly touch on is that I wish to echo what Dan Stroh, the Planning Department, mentioned earlier is, you know, what are we trying to achieve and through these code objectives? And I don't think it's just density for density's sake. We want to build a better, more livable downtown. And as it relates to the OLB corridor, and other areas such as the East Main property that was described, density does seem to be a very important component of making it more livable. And it certainly design contributes to that. I won't take time to discuss a super bonus example, but if Commissioner Carlson wishes one, I would point out my property at 712, because it is an odd shape. It is within proximity to transportation, 405, the transit center, and so forth. And so I'd be happy to discuss that perhaps after the comments. It's just one example, and where that could be. And I don't necessarily like the phrase super bonus, but the departure process where you could add more density, more FAR per se, or height, when it's extremely important. But I don't think that necessarily contradicts the need for other properties, especially the OLD, that need predictability. They have a lot of land, but they have a lot of chips on the table, but they need more predictability for the business model. So with that said, I'd like to turn this over to Jeff Taylor.
Thank you. Hello, everybody. Before I get into this study that you've seen before, most of you've seen before, but a lot of people here haven't, that goes over the current FARs and why we support the BDAs and others' suggestions of making a uniform 90% max, because it's just all over the place as is. But I do want to state that on the subject of the 40-foot setback requirement between properties, and other folks are going to go through that in detail. One of the perhaps unintended consequences of that is that property owners with large sites have a huge incentive to just subdivide their properties into 30,000 square foot sites and sell them. And the result of that is going to be a bunch of independent projects as opposed to well thought out master plan developments over larger parcels. So it's perhaps something enough thought hasn't been given to, but that would be a consequence for sure. And also would state that giving more flexibility to the 80-foot separation between the buildings makes a lot of sense. Also, one other point that we're here, when we go to the amenity system, 75% of the amenity, in order to get you to the base to the max, has to come from open space. And the idea of a flexible amenity going to the city council to perhaps bridge that gap in some form, I don't know who would do that as currently written. Who would go through the city council process in order to get a flexible amenity, not for increased height and increased FAR, but just for that flexible amenity? I don't know who would do that. But we fully support the idea of the staff having the flexibility administratively to allow for a flexible amenity that they feel is appropriate. And then, of course, the super bonus for stuff that's outside of that. Also, with regard to the Burke analysis that a lot of folks refer to, that was one heck of an analysis. I don't know how many of you have actually gone through it. They did thousands of different studies on the different sites of downtown. And the point of that is it's impossible for somebody to analyze every potential outcome of downtown W, or even get close to it. When you look at a particular site, you get soils conditions, you have current market conditions, you have setbacks, you've got location, access points, water table issues, the current market conditions. I mean, there's so many things that go into making a development successful. It's impossible for someone like the Burke Group to do an analysis that hits everybody. It's just impossible. And this is a result of it, and we'll go through it of example of it. This is right here, and again, some of you have already seen this. The way the base FAR as a percentage of the max FAR. So if you're a property owner in downtown Bellevue, you want to be the 100% guy, because in order to fully build out your site, you have to provide zero amenities or write a check for zero. If you happen to be on the lower tier of someone like 41%, you know, 60% of your FAR, you either got to write a check or provide some public benefit, which is going to be very, very difficult to get from the base to the max as currently written. But as you can see, 70% of the zones are at a 75% figure, and then there's some at below 50%. So it just doesn't make much sense. It ranges from 41 to 100%. Another fundamental challenge with this, and it goes into the legality of things that, that could cause issues, is that for, in this example, if you look at the large column there, it says square feet of land of 50,000 feet, FAR 5, for buildings, you build the exact same office building in those different districts, the exact same office building, the DT OLB South would have to write a check for $3.125 million or provide public amenities of some sort in that amount, while the others have to pay zero. If you're all chasing the same tenant, you're fundamentally at a disadvantage. So that doesn't make sense. And if you're at a 6-0 FAR, those are the differentials in the value or cost of public amenities or a check written to the city that you'd have to write. Whereas the person who has to write a check of zero, they just got a distinct advantage for a 250 to 300,000 square foot building. If it's a larger square footage, then obviously that's a bigger check. And as has been pointed out before, this is very similar to FAR. It's the differential in the city based upon height, from the base to the max. You can see you want to be at 100%. Some folks are at 22%, 35%, 39%. It's just, you know, if someone came from out of town, plopped down here and looked at the code, they go, what the heck was everybody thinking on this thing? You know, it doesn't make sense. So that's how come the BDA and I think just about every downtown property owner supports the FAR being a 90% of the max for both the FAR and the height. Although why the height is being charged, I don't know. It doesn't make any sense for someone who needs to maximize their FAR that they go above a certain height. Then you want taller, skinnier buildings anyway. So I don't know why that's a potential charge.
New Max. Good evening. Larry Martin with Davis Wright Tremaine. We're here in Bellevue at 777 108th Avenue Northeast. Representing Alex Smith and his property here this evening. And what I'd like to speak with you about is two things. I want to piggyback on what Jeff's saying. On this amenity incentive system, you know, as you've heard me say this before, some of you, as the amenity system is proposed, It's an unlawful tax on development. And I've explained why I take that position in a letter to Alex Smith, which I've submitted for consideration as part of your record this evening. There are many aspects of the incentive system that are unsound. The most telling point is that it puts the greatest monetary burden on owners of property who will receive the greatest increase in development capacity as a result of the proposed zoning changes. The required amount of amenities is tied to rezoning, not impacts of development. This was illustrated by Jeff Taylor's spreadsheet comparing the cost of the required public amenities that must be provided to build the very same building in different zones. The impacts of the same building are going to be roughly the same, whether it's built on one side of the street or the other. When you cross a zoning boundary, the cost of the required public amenities changes. This is a result of pegging the base FAR to 85% of the maximum allowed under the current zoning. Under the proposal, zones that already have a relatively high maximum FAR are required to provide fewer public amenities as compared to zones that currently have a low maximum FAR. As proposed, the amenity system is thus a tax on reclassification of land, or you can call it a tax on construction buildings, or you can call it a tax on development. It doesn't matter which term you use, a tax or charge, direct or indirect, on any of those activities is prohibited by state law. So how can we fix this? Well, following the recommendation of the BDA to set the base FAR and height, although I agree with Jeff's comment, why you'd want to impose a charge on height when we're looking for taller, skinnier buildings escapes me. I mean, you should just eliminate height from that, and it only comes into play really when you use relatively little base, little FAR, and you have a tall, skinny building. But I'll ignore that for the minute. If you set the base FAR and height at 90% of the new maximum for all zones, it goes a long way to eliminating the unfairness. It starts spreading the burden fairly. It becomes closer to really trying to deal with impacts, not put a tax on rezoning or development. It also would be consistent with the historical practice that about 10% of the FAR for downtown development has been earned through the bonus amenity system. So we kind of line it up with past practice. The second point I wanted to speak to tonight is encouraging density near light rail stations. There are many reasons that this is a best practice in other communities that have light rail throughout the country. I've submitted, also for your record this evening, a ULI study. I encourage you to take a look at it. This is a December 2016 analysis of nearly 10,000 apartment units. They looked at both development near transit, which they referred to as TOD for transit-oriented development, and non-TOD apartments. And here's some key findings. People who live in TOD apartments commute by public transit at a rate 5 times greater than non-TOD residents. Local governments reap substantial fiscal benefits from TOD, including higher net tax revenues and lower impacts on public services. TOD development not only pays its own way, it also subsidizes city services for existing non-TOD residential development. I've also submitted an email from the city's principal transportation planner, Kevin McDonald, along with a transportation analysis. People have been asking about it, and I would respectfully suggest that they maybe missed some meetings or haven't been paying attention. It is in your record, along with an email from Kevin McDonald. The transportation analysis looks at the zoning proposed by the downtown livability amendments. Mr. McDonald, in his email, confirmed that there will be less impact on traffic congestion downtown with the zoning changes than without the zoning changes. This is due to the shift of future development to OLB sites who have excellent access to and from I-405 and other transportation corridors to the east. And what it results is traffic to and from development on these sites will have very short trips through the downtown. They're traveling through relatively few intersections. They do not contribute to the transportation congestion that occurs at the intersections closer to the core of downtown. More development can be accommodated at these OLB locations with less impact on the same development, than the same development located on sites closer to the downtown core. And again, this study, the email, and the ULI study are all in your record.
So I won't have to quickly jump in. You're almost at time.
Could I just wrap it up?
Please, real quick? Yeah, thank you.
The benefits of excellent vehicular access at the OLB sites will be enhanced by proximity to the light rail stations. We've seen from the ULID study that the TO development in close proximity to the stations gets 5 times as many people commuting by transit than non-TOD development. So those are all good reasons to encourage it. How do you do it? I would suggest you take a look at exempting some quantity of TOD development from the calculation of FAR. Thank you very much.
Chair?
Yes, yes.
I'm going to try to ask this question in a way that makes sense to you from Matt. So the first chart that you brought up showed many of the percentage of max FAR ranging around 85%. And then Mr. Martin said that 90% lines it up with past practice. So if FAR didn't change and 90% is past practice, and I'm looking at 85 here, I'm really trying to understand how did you get from what I'm seeing is a pretty clear thing that is under 85% across the board except for a couple, and then it jumps to 90. So I'd like to understand where the 90 is justified.
Well, I think what Mr. Martin was referring to specifically on this is that historically, you got to your maximum FAR almost exclusively through providing structured parking below grade.
Okay.
And then what developments typically use, they only really had about 10% more to go. That's it. And so now that the parking structure, below grade parking structures have been taken off the table, and it's. I mean, one can make the argument that, in effect, for some sites, it's a down zone. because it's even difficult to get to your old max, the new max to the bonus system. You know, you write a check. At the end of the day, you write a check. So I believe that was where Larry was going to. These are the proposed existing, the proposed the current code percentages. So, for instance, if you just want to go down where the cursor is at, it happens to be on DTOLB South.
Yeah.
Their base is 2.5. Their buildable area will increase by 100% by going from base to max.
I understand the differential between these. That isn't my question. My question is, how did the... I would look at these numbers and draw, you know, throw a dart and get an 85%. Right. So I'm just questioning why the ask is 90.
Maybe I can jump in also to refer you to Commissioner Lang's discussion. I think when he gets a chance, he can elaborate on that. But also, it is in part based on the record that you have in front of you, but you do have to dig it out. And in the, when you read through the staff reports, they actually they looked at a large number of projects in the past and kind of give you a historical rundown. How was the bonus FAR earned? And that's where the 90% figure pops up.
Thank you. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
We have Ms. Brittany Barker up next.
Good evening, Chair Davidos, Planning Commissioner Mayor Stokes. My name is Brittany Fortin Barker. I'm with Fortin Group, 10112 Northeast 10th Street in downtown Bellevue. We're at Suite 202. I'm a fourth generation in our family business. As you know, Fortin Group is focused on positioning our 11 acres in the Northwest Village to accommodate redevelopment over the long term in a way that will achieve many of the goals and ideals articulated in the Downtown Livability Study. We really would like to express our appreciation for all the hard work that has gone into this proposed amenity incentive system and the downtown land use code updates. Fortin Group has taken an active role throughout the Livability Initiative process. We have worked closely with the CAC, city staff, community members, to help shape the future of the Northwest Village. For the past 5 years, we've held meetings, open houses, and we've had one-on-one discussions with our neighbors, including the single-family residential neighbors around downtown, to collaboratively develop a future vision for what we collectively think is a truly exemplary mixed-use project on our property that will create neighborhood amenities, active streetscapes, open space, retail, and more. From our initial examination, we believe the updated code amendments and amenity incentive system will help facilitate the realization of our shared goals, and the proposed dimensional standards appear to be feasible as applied to our vision. We are looking forward, however, to confirming the detailed calculation method that's been referenced with the Burke study, the assumptions and the use of the flexible amenity option with the city planning staff, and hope to do that before this legislation is put through to council. I also would like to make one key point related to the podium typology. We believe the floor plate trigger heights should be increased by 5 to 8 feet to allow for taller retail and more feasible appropriate podium forms within the current height recommendations. We have a detailed rationale in the letter I submitted earlier today. I have hard copies, which I'll pass out in a minute for you. Thank you again. We really appreciate the opportunity to provide comments and look forward to continuing to work with city staff as we have the Planning Commission, as well as City Council, to create the world-class downtown that Bellevue deserves. Thank you again for your service and your time and commitment to this process.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. John, I believe Stout. I see the name correctly. Good evening.
my job.
I know too, but we'll give this one.
My name is John Stout from Wilbur Thompson. My address is 225 Terry Avenue, North Seattle, Washington, 98009.
Blaine Weber, Weber Thompson Architects. We're a tag team this evening, but we would like 5 minutes each. If we may, Chair Davidos, good evening. Mayor Stokes, good evening. Council members, thank you for listening to us this evening.
Okay, and I'll jump right in. We're going to focus tonight specifically on one of the topics that's been brought up several times tonight, and that is the 40-foot interior setbacks and the tower spacing. And so you've seen a version of this presentation that was very similar to this last week, so I'll kind of quickly move through the beginning. This first image is really just to set the precedent for what this really does and how difficult this makes development under this 40-foot setback requirement. And shown here are all the projects that would not comply with that that are currently built in the city. Just diving into some more specific examples of what this would do to their development. First example, the Braeburn would lose essentially two of their towers to this 40-foot interior setback. They have a large site that's well over 30,000 square feet, but it's in a irregular-shaped site, which is the sites that are really affected by this the most. The second example, the Bellevue Towers, they look like they're on the property lines. They're not actually, just a little perspective, but they are not set back 40 feet to comply with this requirement. You would probably end up with only a single tower in the development. Same with Avalon Towers, just setting back from two property sites, you'd probably end up with a single tower rotated at that northeast corner. And then the last example on smaller projects like Elements, the projects are built right up to the property lines in this example, and so 40 feet would kill all development on that site. The current proposed setback diagram that's in the draft code is shown here, and what this does is it kind of shows this imaginary super block that has, that's nicely, cleanly divided into four big chunks, and what you actually get in the city is much different than that. This is one example block between Northeast 2nd and 4th, and it's broken into, even with some assemblages assumed, six different blocks, and the 40-foot setback are imposed over the top here in red that show just how much developable area for towers is removed by this 40-foot setback. On the sites 2 and 6, you're losing 55% of the site area to this setback. On site number 4, which is still well over 30,000 square feet, you're losing 71% of the buildable tower area, with a narrow gap of around 53 feet, which is not feasible to do a tower in. Another example block in the city, again, with some assumed and known assemblages with those 4-foot setbacks. Again, losing much of their site area. Only one, parcel number 4 shown here, is even under 30,000 square feet and qualifies for only the 20-foot setback. What this is essentially doing is making all of these small and narrow sites mid-rise development. You're downzoning those sites. This is a zooming back out to the whole city and all of the parcels, just based on the current parcel diagram. You can see the two that we just showed are kind of in the middle of variance with having smaller sites and larger sites combined. There's some larger parcels. Those are mostly already developed. And then there are a lot of super blocks that have many smaller blocks on them. So then to conclude, We believe that the required combination of 40-foot setbacks, 80-foot tower spacing, and then the 20-foot street setbacks are really reducing developable potential by greater than 50% on many parcels, leaving them likely undeveloped, empty, and with no public amenities. This effort will downzone many lots in Bellevue, making mid-rise projects the only feasible solution for much of the city and greatly devaluing the land. The city's desire to provide open space to the street will inherently be ignored due to interior setbacks, pushing all the tower development to the street frontage. And I think this was something that was brought up earlier, is that we don't want to create a wall of development. But if you look at a super block like this, the only area that's still buildable for towers is out at the front corners and frontage of the sites. And then the new setback protects sites that may not develop for decades at the expense of sites that are ready to develop today. This is not a formula for growth and transformation, but a plan for stagnation. And reducing the setback to 20 feet with incentives for tower spacing and the FAR bonus system would be a way to ensure that current and future developments have the paths they need to develop in downtown. Thank you.
I believe I failed to provide my address, which is 1521 2nd Avenue in Seattle. I may have a Seattle address, but my connection to go to Bellevue goes all the way back to 1977. I started my architectural career in Washington State here in Bellevue, working for El Bayless way back in the day. Worked on many Bellevue projects since then and have a great affection for this city. First of all, I'd like to endorse the BDA letter, the points 1 through 9. I'm absolutely in concurrence with the letter itself and those points. Secondly, I'd like to express admiration for the planners at COB that have worked very hard on the code today. I know that they have very good intent. There's one particular issue that I would like to provide some additional clarity on that John just presented with regard to this 40-foot setback and some unintended consequences that I believe will result. In fact, the result of this 40-foot setback will represent a severe downzone for many sites that will result in a diminution of property value, certainly a significant loss of potential tax revenue for the city. It will also reduce the density that that we believe, in fact, would preclude the kind of development that we all envision. I think I'm stealing a quote from Bob Wallace there. A quick review of some of the more salient and I believe important suggestions, requests, proposals from the Citizens Advisory Committee. First of all, reduce sprawl, better achieve the vision for downtown as a vibrant mixed-use center, encourage great place strategy, accommodate future population of 19,000 by 2035, improve the area as residential setting. I believe that all of these goals will be precluded by this 40-foot setback. Here are 5 specific reasons that the 40-foot setback will result in a down zone and diminution of value and property taxes. First of all, the 40-foot setback results in building pads that are too small and impractical for tower development. I've been designing towers for 47 years. I've focused most of my career in high-rise residential and hospitality towers, as well as commercial office towers. And the requirement for a certain practical footprint is absolute. A smaller footprint that does not allow practical development is basically a deal killer. Secondly, a two-tower project will be subject to not only the two 40-foot setbacks at the side lot, but an 80-foot setback between towers. We have a project right now that you've seen presented a number of times. If you apply these 40-foot setbacks and 80-foot setbacks, the building pad that is left not only kills the development outright, it also relegates the site to a 45-foot mid-rise proposition. Thirdly, a 40-foot setback in an urban setting is unheard of in any major city that is trying to reduce sprawl, incentivize a regional growth center, encourage a great place strategy. In fact, such a stringent setback will have exactly the opposite effect, as it will devalue property and discourage development, if not kill developments that could otherwise help to achieve these goals and preclude the kind of development that we all envision. Fourth, the 40-foot setbacks will make it impossible. Is my time up, or is that the first?
Yes.
That's okay. I apologize. I'll cut my comments there. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much.
So a quick point of, I guess, time check. We're about 2 hours and 5 minutes into the session, and about a third of the way through the list of folks lined up. So first, we're going to take a quick break. We'll take about a 10-minute break for coffee and biorhythms. We'll get back in and then keep going.
But I think we want to make sure that we're available.
The only struggle is
You mean down, you mean, are you talking down south, south of Main Street?
Yeah.
And they're working on trying to get that zone to a higher standard.
I don't.
Thank you.
What assignment you had?
Good job.
I
Welcome back. We'll get going with the second half of our public hearing. I hope you've got enough coffee to keep you going. So the second third, yes. So next up on the list, we have Mr. Scott Matthews. Am I saying the last name right?
Yes.
I think it's
yes.
Mr. Chairman,
I am.
Sorry, Scott.
Commissioner Carlson, please, if you would pause for a second.
Yeah. Can I make just a short suggestion to the audience, as the longest-serving member here on the commission and someone who does a fair bit of public speaking myself? You are allotted up to 5 minutes. You don't have to take all 5 minutes, and my experience has been that the presentations that make the greatest impact, leave the best impression, are usually those that are short, clear, and concise.
There could be an FAR bonus for short presentations.
Another way of saying we'd like to get as many speakers here tonight as possible. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Richard. Thank you, sir.
All right, thank you. My name is Scott Matthews. I'm a senior development director at Vulcan. My work address is 505 Fifth Avenue South, Suite 900, Seattle 98104. I am a Bellevue resident, by the way, so I have an interest beyond my professional interest in Bellevue. Thank you all, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Mayor, and Planning Commission, city staff. Just really quickly, I echo the, I think the sustained and extraordinary effort that you put into this planning process. It's it goes without saying it's important. Otherwise, my comments will be brief because I think many of these things that I had on my mind have been addressed. And one of the things I guess I would like to say is we're new to the Bellevue story as a developer and an investment group. And at Vulcan, you know, when we started in the early 2000 in South Lake Union, you know, we developed a philosophy that's not uncommon, but a philosophy that was when we enter an opportunity or neighborhood or a district, we like to think about, one, we need to provide a rate of return for our owner, our investor. We want to be really thoughtful about how we engage the neighborhood and the other stakeholders in the community. And we want to have a soft footprint on the environment. And, you know, I don't know, that seemed a little more novel in 2002, and it seems more commonplace today, but, you know, sometimes when things are right, they, you know, they stand the test of time. So I think as we engage with the community and the leadership here in the city, we hope to bring some of that thinking and philosophy here as we hope to find opportunities here. We are very much attracted to the arc of Bellevue's future. I would say my boss has been a little disappointed. We've been slow finding an opportunity here, which I've heard about a lot. But thankfully, we've been busy with some opportunities across the lake. And I think it's helpful for us as we're thinking and we're now engaging the work that you've engaged in today in this draft code to reflect on some successes and some things perhaps that we would have thought about doing differently if we had the opportunity. And I think many, many important points have been addressed here tonight, and I'll only kind of touch a couple on those that emphasize the point. But I think part of the arc of the discussion is a look at Bellevue's opportunity as to compete not only on a regional basis, but on a national basis and on now an international basis. As we all know, we're competing across the world now.
And I mean, we're here because we like the arc of the opportunity here, and we like to invest local. Paul's expressed specific interest in being in Bellevue, and we think it's just a great opportunity. So I look at the code and things and say, well, what is here that helps Bellevue achieve its mission to be competitive today, tomorrow, and 30 years from now? And I think some of these things have been highlighted here. I think the tower spacing analysis was one. There was a thoughtful presentation by Blaine and his group. The flexibility around parking. Parking is a very dynamic consideration in the market today. I think the example in the MU zoning of where you need to bonus up to the five for the office. And one of the things, thinking about some success of some fast-growing companies in the region that we became, a lot of these companies started off, these first buildings were under 200,000 square feet. And providing the opportunity on the east side for companies to grow incrementally is really, really important, because they're fast-growing and their appetite tends to come in bite-sized increments, but they need the predictability of that future growth. And those zones are going to be, I think, critical in terms of achieving and providing that capacity and having the breadth of job and opportunity here. The cross-block connection, I think those rules and elements need some further study and consideration. There were some comments about the pet path, and I think there's some considerations there around how great and some other conditions really impinge on your ability to provide that in a way that's going to meet the goals. There's a comment about the tower separation trigger at 75 feet, and I think that is also problematic and needs some additional consideration.
I'm going to have to jump in, sir. I think we're almost at time. If you could make a closing comment, go ahead.
I would just, the only other thing I'd say, that was really it. I'd just say that, we're really looking forward to working with engage a further collaboration and engagement with the city, and really looking for Bellevue to achieve its place in really for the growth for the region. That's it.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Next up, we have Mr. Craig Davenport, I believe.
Great, thank you. My name is Craig Davenport. I'm with MZA Architects at 600 108th Avenue Northeast, Bellevue. We are very in support of the VDA recommendations that Patrick shared earlier, and we're a part of those, putting those together. And we just want to again add to everything you've been hearing about the setback issue of the 40-foot setback. You know, what we're finding is that we've been working on projects in Bellevue this past year and a half that have been waiting for this change, and that particular change that was as a proposal wasn't known until about a month ago, and we'd already worked on many downtown projects that our developer clients have invested heavily into, and to find that added in that late in the game really impacted these projects and the ability to get them done within a time frame. Not to mention the cost that they put into the studies. We're finding now when we're trying to pull these towers back that we've been detailing and designing, as Blaine mentioned, the structural requirement for a tower of these heights, the core size reduces the amount of leasable space. And by the time you set back another 20 feet, there's just nothing left. And so, these projects are not going to go forward, with that requirement. As Scott mentioned, we think that the 75-foot limit as far as where they take place, as far as the height of the tower being spread over the entire downtown core, just doesn't feel right. That's just, I could understand it if it was required as far as when we go into a 600-foot height. I mean, the purpose of these changes, we were going to go from 450 to 600. At that point, we understand, that we need some other sort of open area, requirements. But at 75 feet, it just basically applies over the entire a zone, then it just doesn't make sense. A couple more points I want to make is the amenity for the major pedestrian corridor. We've been talking about the Grand Connection here for last couple of years, and we're all very excited about that for downtown Bellevue. And yet the bonus point for amenity for providing that corridor, that 60-foot wide corridor, is being reduced from a 16 times the square footage to a 13.3. I feel that the importance of the Grand Connection is something we all want to provide. We want to do a good job. The cost to do it is going to be very expensive. It's an element that the developers are going to lose so much of the land for, and yet they're going to get a reduction in the amount of amenity they get for it. On top of that, that is a super bonusable area. It's an area you can add an FAR to the top of your max FAR, and if you don't use it, you can actually sell it into the downtown core and transfer it to another site. So in effect, they reduce the value of their property by reducing what that multiplier is. So we propose that it be kept at 16 or increased for that matter. And one more item I want to bring up is the parking. I think that came up at our last meeting to have the ability to reduce parking requirements within a certain distance of the light rail to the transit stations. Parking has really become a driver on these projects as we go higher and we're trying to fit the towers on the sites. The amount of parking that's required, the depth of the parking on the Elevate project. Basically, when we got down to below level 6, you get into the water table, and the cost goes up astronomically. So that is what's limiting the size of the projects and the FAR and how much we build is parking. So I think that we need to look at the downtown core and the parking requirements and what we can do with shared parking and how much the transit will help for that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next up, Ms. Laura, I'm going to, it's Hurdlebrine, H-U-R-D-E-L, I can't quite read the rest of the last name. First name is Laura. All right, we will keep moving on. In that case, Mr. Bruce Carlson. No? Okay, we'll keep moving on. Mr. Tim Jackson.
It's been a whole week since I saw you all last.
Too long.
Yeah, of course. Talk about more FAR. Again, like everyone said, I just want to repeat thank you all so much for how much you've done here and all the time that you spend away from your family and friends and everything else. I mean, that's real, and you do it all the time. I find it amazing. We're just dealing with this, and you're dealing with the entire city. So thank you very much for all the time that you contributed to this project, as well as you, Mayor Stokes. I've seen you on plenty of Wednesdays here over the last few years, and one thing that you also give up Mondays and Fridays and everything else. And also all the other council members that are here tonight. Tim Jackson with PMF 15015, Suite 203, Bellevue, Washington.
And Ian Morrison on behalf of PMF Investments as well, and my address 701 6th Avenue, 5th Avenue, Suite 6600, Seattle, Washington.
So now that there's a rumored FAR bonus for brevity, we're going to speed things up. And basically, just repeat what we said last week. The real thing that I want to do tonight is that we understand that the letter we submitted last week, maybe a couple pages were missing, so just wanted to hand out a full draft of that to make sure all of you get that. And then just speak from a regional perspective. I'm not sure that all of you have received it or not, but organizations like FutureWise, NAOP, some other very important regional organizations that think about smart growth and planning are weighing in on this process. And what's remarkable about what all of you have done is that they're largely consistent in that the project so far seems to be weighed very positively by the community, and they're all kind of pointing at the same things that have been brought up by the BDA. So it appears that from a regional perspective, a lot of the things that you've done here are really, really amazing and really encouraging a strong future for downtown Bellevue. But there are a few fixes. Mr. Wall said earlier, I'm not going to bore all of you with the contents of the letter, but just hope that you'll stay focused on what everybody's talking about as far as tower spacing, trying to get the FAR more fair throughout the entire downtown. And then just thinking about the things that you really care about and hoping that that you aren't trying to find a way to penalize your way to the goals that you're seeking down the road.
if you're not incentivizing it, it's very hard in the real estate market to see things happen because everything costs money, everything takes financing, and it's the incentivization that allows you to get the financing that you need to make these projects become reality.
And just one additional point that you've heard from, we echo all of the points that have been made by the BDA and then also by some of the other property owners that are in the OLB district. Obviously, you've heard from PMF that this is the Sheraton site, which is that gateway site there on Main and 112. And so there was one piece that I think is really important to highlight in the request for the potential for an additional FAR to support transit-oriented development around the future East Main Station. You heard that, you know, Kevin McDonald in the transportation analysis that the city has done has recognized that around light rail stations, there is an opportunity to provide some density. That density is, you know, because of the location next to 405 and because of the transit opportunities, that may not have the same level of effect that you're hearing some concern about on the transportation network. And so we think that as this gateway site, as you're making this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity that's leveraging the multi-billion-dollar investment in transit that's going to be coming to the East Main Station, we really think that when you hear from not only the development community but also from the environmental community like FutureWise, that this is a place where maybe we can think about some strategic opportunity for density, that sort of broad-based coalition to us really makes a lot of sense of how do we leverage the placemaking that's reflected in the council principles and the work that you've been doing for the last 4 years while respecting that neighborhood context and also respecting the minimizing the impacts on transportation. So we think that that strategic opportunity for additional FAR bonuses around transit-oriented development really makes sense, and we would encourage the Planning Commission to recommend that to the Council.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Moving on. It's a K, last name is the C. I'm sorry, I'm not able to read the last name.
Oh, I can sign up to
speak. Oh, right, no worries. Thank you, ma'am. No worries. Okay, moving. That's true. No. A double bonus FARs.
And I heard you consider sell them.
Transfer. But it's only transferable to somebody that doesn't speak.
You ran out of names, right?
All right, let's keep going. I believe it's Kurt Olsen. All right, we'll keep moving on.
Be a bidding war soon.
Mr. Mike Yellen.
Good evening. Thank you so much. I'll keep this quick. Mike Yellum, representing the Fannin Group of Companies, located at 10655 Northeast 4th Street. Couple items I want to bring up specifically. First off, we are members of the BDA, and we are aligned with what Patrick and Brian had to say earlier in the documents they published. But I would really like to drill down on the bifurcation of the zoning. So, for example, the O2 zoning looks like it's been split into maximum height incentives or maximum heights that are different. And so I believe that it is unfair to bifurcate the different zones. So O2 should just be one height increase. The other item is tower separation. Echoing many of the comments, the 80 foot is unrealistic, and we'd also like to encourage and maintain the small lot exemption. Lastly, the 20 foot, we'd like to encourage the maintenance of the 20-foot internal setback for towers on a site. Thank you for your time and your consideration.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. moving in the list forward. Ms. Catherine Crouch.
It'll work.
Apologies if I messed up.
Close enough. No. Catherine Crouch, who sometimes the other name falls out. You know that happens. good evening. My name is Catherine Crouch Hughes. I live at 10203 Northeast 31st Place. I'm in the Northtown community. I represent myself, although I do sit that steering committee, and we have been following the affordability and livability of Bellevue for a couple of decades now, as they say. Briefly and quickly, I'm enumerated here. Your allocation of amenities, of course, we all know how those are gotten by things too high or things too fat, but the point being is it is dedicated to open space there going forward, your amenities. Keep it tied to the open space, and you're to be commended for that going forward. Trust me, you are. That's golden. Your in-lieu fees, I'd like to see them tied to projects, not going to a central money pot. These projects, or the project, the property, the development, it has many names, of course. Those fees need to go back to that development property or site, and not go into the greater good or the downtown park or anything of the such. I think if we do in-lieu fees and it does not stay with the property, we've lost the battle, so to speak. You didn't solve anything. Number three, hold the 80-foot building separations as they rise. Yes, I am not a builder. But I do not think that we should modify the 40-foot separation for multiple towers and bring it down to 20 feet. Sounds ludicrous, looks dumb. We will not have a pretty skyline if we do. And I think I've heard it said numerous times, light and air. And if you don't stay with 40 feet, you're not going to have light and air moving. The recommendation of bringing standards to 90% of FAR sounds lovely. I just assume you bring it to 80 and let's just call it good. Lastly, no super bonus of any kind allowed. No super bonus of any kind allowed. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Next up, Mr. Mike Nelson. Or Nielsen, I'm sorry.
Evening, commissioners.
Sure. My name is Mike Nielsen. I live at 10650 Northeast 9th Place in downtown Bellevue. I'll keep my comments brief as well. Wanted to really talk on three points. One is with respect to the 40-foot setback, which I know has been beaten like a dead horse tonight. So I'll just leave it as simple as I live in one of those red towers. I don't want to be homeless. And so, no, reality is that, you know, you look at what it would do looking at that red, you know, spot or plot map up there and what it would do to development had this been enacted 20 years ago. And I think, you know, the argument's been made. So I won't beat that dead horse. The other, I guess, comments kind of tied to the height allocations that have been made. And the difficult thing for us, I represent the Washington Square Super Block in downtown Bellevue, that we have about 1 million square feet that we can build along Northeast 8th, prominent corridor. The problem, and I've mentioned this before, that the problem with increasing height without doing anything with FAR is that unless you're selling for-sale product, you know, we're actually going to develop for-sale product, it won't be used. You just, no office developer is going to make a smaller plate and go up higher in the air. It's pragmatically impossible. You're not going to do it. You won't get your returns out of the tower, so no financier will finance it, no investor will invest in it. So it's just kind of the pragmatics of it. Sounds great, but it won't work. Now, where it will work is with housing that can be sold, so condominiums, correct? the problem in the state of Washington, which we're not going to correct in this forum, is the condo legislation is pretty onerous. And so, Aaron knows what I'm talking about. And so, many condo developers, including ourselves, have kind of run for the hills as far as developing condos. You've got Naposa and a few others that are willing to do it. That said, we would like to build more condos. And I think at the end of the day, I'll make the point that, you know, we've got this, and it was mentioned earlier, we've got this inverse relationship that you're going to take towers higher, but if you can't provide the amenity to your site or whatever it is, you're going to pay for that. It's counterintuitive. In theory, I would, as a developer, I'd say, you need to pay me to go higher because it's not economically feasible for me. And so I'm not, knowing that no city's going to pay a developer to go higher, we need to think, how can a city pay? And what I would argue is that the old zoning or existing zoning in the O1 zone has an unlimited restriction for residential. At the end of the day, residential living in downtown Bellevue, people that call home like I do, own a unit, but they live in a condominium because that's kind of how you live in downtown Bellevue, that is what's going to create vibrancy in your city. You can throw as many bars as you want at the streetscape. You can have restaurants. You can do all the ULI studies that you want. It doesn't change until you get people living downtown. And so I would just make the plug that we need to do more in this zoning remake to stimulate downtown living. And I've said this before, but we really need to figure out what is going to make developers like us that have a million square feet that we can build say, hey, let's go develop condos, notwithstanding, you know, legislation, whatever else might be in the way of a developer wanting to do condos in downtown Bellevue. What's going to make developers say, let's go build more condos because that creates homeowners, which creates livable residents that are visiting the farmers markets, hitting the bars, doing the restaurants, you know, doing the restaurant scene, shopping, doing everything else that goes with living in the downtown. So thank you for the time and appreciate it. Thank you.
Ms. Betsy Hummer.
She left.
Oh, she
left. But she spoke at public comment.
That's right.
I don't know if she wanted to go.
Yeah. Mr. Jonathan Cagle.
So I'm just going to note there seems to be some feedback on the microphone. I don't know if there's anything to be done with it.
Okay.
Maybe the two of them are pointed too close.
She's close to the
microphone.
Give it a shot. Hi, I'm Jonathan Cagle. I serve as a director of the Viewcrest Community Association, Box 312, Bellevue, Washington, 98009, and this is our 70th year in Bellevue, if you will. So we've been around, and I just wanted to say thank you to the commissioners and the planning department who have worked with us over the past months and years. Thanks for considering the adjacent neighborhoods around the perimeter overlay that was created not very long ago, that perimeter overlay district, has gone a great deal to reducing the concerns of our neighborhood and preserving that transition to the single family, lower density homes that, that we have in our neighborhood. But recently, talk about super bonuses, and there was a request, I guess, today to raise the maximum height in that perimeter district by 10 feet was raised. I'm not sure where those came from, but obviously having these changes come in a late date is somewhat concerning. I thought we kind of had a set plan there, and we want to make sure that neighborhoods are involved if these changes continue to evolve. Another thing that seems to be developing are these in-lieu fees, and understand the justification for that, but we would like to see if there's a way of making sure that if those in-lieu fees are paid, that those amenities that are paid for by these in-lieu fees are in proximity to the area that's impacted. So if something near our neighborhood were to be built and they choose not to build those amenities, we'd like those amenities to be accessible by walking, or at least on our side of the downtown area. Another thing that I brought up earlier and just want to make sure it's considered are sunlight considerations. 20.25A.E talks about sunlight and shadows, and currently it's limited to public spaces and neighboring developments. I'd like to see if that could also include neighboring neighborhoods as well, because we do border, in the Viewcrest neighborhood, we border that village. There's a lot of talk early on about alleys with addresses, and one thing that isn't really addressed is alleys that are used as alleys. We're seeing with developments, like the most recent one on the corner of 100th and 10th, that things like garbage service isn't provided because there aren't alleys. And so garbage service is, there's a 36 square foot garbage area that's right next to the street or a more than 100 units apartment complex, and it is really close to residential homes. And there really is no guidelines in our current code about where to put recycling, dumpsters, and other utilities that used to be in alleys. So that would be something we'd like to see as adjacent properties get developed more and more densely. Where do all those things that we don't like to think about get placed, and how can they be done so that the noise and smells are minimized? And then finally, a couple things came when I was personally reading through the voluminous documents for this this meeting. On the economics of the incentive systems, there's a lot of numbers and abstract concepts. It would be really helpful to me and probably for other people if there were examples like, hey, if we did this for Bellevue Towers, here's what it would look like in terms of what's being paid and what it looks like. And maybe a couple of examples so we can see how those are accounted for and see how that all that shakes out. And the last one, this is another thing that I brought up, is how do we deal with old credits from these incentive systems, these offset systems? Some that were accrued in excess, not to use Bellevue Towers again, but I believe that they had a significant amount of overage that they weren't even able to use, and I believe there is some ability to potentially trade it or reuse it. How those are carried over, we'd like to see addressed in the communications that are in the final rules. And that's all. Thanks again for your consideration.
Thank you, sir. Here. Moving on to the list, Ms. Linda Mahalik.
She left, okay.
All right, we'll keep moving on. Arnie Hall.
Hey. Arnie Hall, W resident, 17227 Southeast 40th Place. And here, appreciate all your hard work. I think we all share the aspirations of the CAC and the Livability Initiative, and there are some key factors that you've heard time and time again tonight. And as an architect and a builder and a developer, I think it's imperative that we support the BDA's recommendations, specifically the 90% as a baseline. I think it's imperative that you do not defer the affordable housing, and that you work hard to incorporate that into this code cycle. I think that the 40-foot has got to remain at 20. I think that there are a lot of creative design professionals that have practiced in Bellevue for years, and they're very smart and very, I think, risk-taking developers who can figure out how to create public amenities if they remove these restrictions that you're imposing with this new land use code amendment. I think there's two things that are inevitable. Prices aren't going down. Bellevue fees don't go down. I mean, you look at the price of development in Bellevue versus Seattle, and Seattle is a friendlier neighborhood to develop in from a developer standpoint. I say that, and I hope that you guys take these considerations into effect. Thank you.
Thanks. Mr. Andy Lucker, please.
Good evening, Commissioner Davidos and the commissioners. My name is Andy Lockup, 508th Avenue, Bellevue. As you know, I own approximately 3 acres of the site where the Cost Plus Bird Market sits today at Bellevue Way, Northeast 8. I have been a citizen of Bellevue for 20 years. I have been looking for a dream project and I believe I have finally found it. A project that is legacy to my family and defines my commitment to the city. I would also like to thank the Planning Commission for all the amazing work they have done so far. We have been in conversation with you, the Planning Commission, for a year now. They've had a simple message. We don't need any more park. We don't need any more parking. We want to provide great pedestrian open space and iconic buildings. To do this, we just need a little more height. Because you've already increased the heights at the Fortin site to the west, our modest request for increase will fit in nicely to the gentle rise of heights in the downtown core. This is a unique site downtown and deserves this attention for many reasons. This particular block north of Bellevue Square is far from the edges of downtown and can accept more height. The dual mid-block connectors on this site dictate the need for more height. This location is Main and Main and deserves a more iconic design with greater height. The project can set new benchmark for high quality pedestrian space downtown. Additional height will provide the opportunity for better tower spacing and better pedestrian access areas. I believe citizens of Bellevue want and need more iconic architecture and great amenities in downtown. I also want to remind the Commission that the CAC endorsed 300-foot heights at this location and the MU zone. Jack and I have suggested a simple way to add on to 14-foot note to accomplish this small change. The time to make the decisions about downtown code is here. We urge you to support our proposed change and our iconic design at this critical location. As many other people have spoken today, the 40-foot setback among towers on property lines will kill many projects in Bellevue, including ours. The site will always have World Market. I also support all 9 points mentioned in the BDA list today. Thank you for your attention and all that you do.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Jack McCullough. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Mayor, members of the Commission. Jack McCullough, 701 Fifth Avenue, Suite 6600, Seattle 9104. We were here last week and enjoyed your comments, Mr. Chair, and in respect of that, I brought you a present tonight.
Oh, thank you.
It's a big rock.
It's a rock.
Big rock.
It's a little rock, but we'll take it.
Where? Compared to pebble, it's pretty
much. We'd like to talk about three rocks tonight. Thank you very quickly. One of them was to follow up on Andy Locke's comments here. Our request to you has been consistent about some modest additional height. And some of the feedback we've been getting is, well, this is a radical proposal. You know, you're asking for additional height in this location. But I'm scratching my head about this because this process has already led to height increases both west of this site and east of this site. The footnote that was incorporated in the code, completely appropriately for the Fortin site, for the 11 acres, allowed heights to go up to 264 feet just in the 11 acres west of this site, much closer to Newcrest. And if you go look east in the O2 zone can now go to 460 feet. Above Northeast Dale. And we're asking for 300 feet in this location. As Andy mentioned, it really kind of nicely finishes that wedding cake, if you will. We're several hundred feet from the neighborhoods to the west. We think this is an appropriate step to take. And in this letter that I will give you tonight, we've outlined again the addition to the footnote that we think is one approach to solving that problem. If what we're trying to do is to create taller, slender towers and better open space, this is your poster child project. Rock number two, the 40-foot setback. You've heard a lot about tonight. I would only add two thoughts. One is there's been an effort to make an exception based on size of site, but I would suggest to you that, as you've seen tonight, size of site has less to do than the dimensions of the site. The width of the site, its configuration, and how those setbacks lay out
given the boundaries of the site, because these sites in downtown Bellevue are not nice rectangles, I don't think, right? So you really have to analyze. John and Blaine took an effort tonight to show you how that rules out. We think that in many of these sites it's going to create a serious problem. And I also philosophically would suggest to you that it runs counter to how Bellevue has approached its downtown development. I mean, Bellevue has said for 35 years, if you are ready to build a project, then we are going to let you build it. We're not going to let you warehouse trips. We're going to keep your permit duration short to make sure that you build these things. They haven't tried to protect sites that may not be developed. And the effect, I think, of this 40 feet is what you're protecting is sites that may not be developed, perhaps for a generation, and punishing sites that are ready to develop now. And if we'd done that 35 years ago, we would not have the downtown you see up there today. Third rock. That is, you've been congratulated a lot tonight for your hard work. And I don't want not to add my name to that, but I want to be candid with you. This code, the first draft of the code, came out 3.5 months ago. And despite all of the visioning work and everything that's been done, this is where the rubber hits the road. And tonight was the first time you really had an opportunity to hear a broad swath of the development community come back to you with comments. Now, codes and plans are wonderful things, but if they're not built, they exist only in these books. And the people who are going to build these visions are the people you've heard from tonight. So my suggestion to you, unfortunately, is that your work may just have begun. And so I want to make sure we do this only once a generation, that we take the time to do this right. And if it takes a couple more months, then let's take a couple more months. And let's not let other exogenous features like SEPA review or the Burke report become handcuffs to your ability to do the right thing. So, in conclusion, I will say, as I thought about this rock here, it is probably a violation of the city's ethics code for me to give you that present. So I'm going to take it back. Unless you have to protect it for your time.
Thank you, sir.
I don't even want it to do that.
So, moving on. We have one more name on the list, and I will apologize. I'm just not able to read the... It starts off with a P, I believe. Yes, ma'am. And I apologize.
That's okay, Pamela Johnston.
Pamela Johnston. It's Pamela Johnston. Thank you.
Not so good in the writing department.
What is?
My husband, he bought all the Girl Scout cookies under the pseudonym of his initials. We don't know he bought everything. Okay. So, Pamela Johnston, 3741 122nd Avenue Northeast, Bellevue. I live in Bridal Trails. I love Bridal Trails. Bridal Trails is the country and the city. I see the skyline, but more important than the skyline to me is the human scale once I'm in downtown. Think of walking in the city of love. Yes, you thought of it. Guangzhou, China. That's my city of love for the breakup. My daughter, which she's adopted. It's a 24-hour city, and I want to make sure that our city is a 24-hour city, that we don't have some of the places that are dead at night or dead in the day. But maybe we want to walk in Paris instead. Compare the north side of the mall. He was just talking about pedestrian side to your thoughts about other cities. You know, the north side of the mall is dead. It's hard to walk across the street to get to Starbucks. That's not the kind of love I want to have for the city. I want to not have a livable Bellevue. I want to have a lovable Bellevue. Some of the incentives. I'm not exactly sure how all these work. So the first thing I was thinking of is, what are the incentives? Is this canopies? And I can think of all these canopy balloon bubbles everywhere. Are some of the incentives getting overused? How is that going to get controlled? Or if there's lots of canopies, what's the order of what comes first and what comes second versus canopies? Downtown Bellevue is really close to my daughter's school, and a lot of people are moving to downtown that go to her school. So, you know, this is a cradle to grave city for toddler to teenager at some points. But are we keeping those play spaces in downtown, not just the park, but around near people's homes? You know, not everyone lives close to the downtown. And if you have some toddlers, it's like you don't want to drag them all the way across town. Or you're going to get in the car and do it, and that's not what we want. I don't understand once the incentives are out there, how the public process pays into that. So I'd like to know more about that. Another thing is, somebody else said, keeping the incentives in the same area of where the building is made. On that token, for the entire downtown, how are we going to deal with keeping the utilities in the downtown area where they need to be downtown and not just taking up other spaces in other neighborhoods because the downtown is growing? Fee in lieu, another public process. You know, I don't want to have things like, okay, here's the projects and here's the towers. If we have the fee in lieu, we need to make sure that it's getting used appropriately for projects and that it's not just into some general fund that we're going to go fund some projects in the other neighborhoods. Process and pace, I guess, is the other thing. How does this whole growth cycle pace itself out? So, of course, traffic studies go into that, and et cetera. Mix of commercial and retail. How are we going to deal with that, or is that just going to come? Is it going to come just as it comes? And the other thing is about the pacing. Are we going to make this all look like, oh, that was made in the 20s? I know that town. That's like a 20s town. Or somehow we've got room to grow. Parking spaces. Again, we love them all. Lots of parking. Get there fast. Get out. Done. But I don't like the outside of the mall, right? So the mall is all interior. How do we grow that to places? The other thing is when I'm looking at people's roofs, if I'm a tall tower and I'm a lower tower, is there incentives to make their roofs pretty so that I don't have to look at like their equipment? Are there incentives for daylighting into the buildings or LEED certified buildings? I'm not sure about these. So I wasn't into all those details. So I'll leave it from there. Faces, you want to see people's faces. You want to have paved places. We want to have cases, we want to pace the development, we want to have parking spaces, we want to have all day, and we want a predictable pace, I guess is the other thing. And we want to make sure that the public is in the process. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lagos. Thank you, appreciate it. That was the last name we had signed up on the sheet. However, if there are other people in the audience who would like to comment, this would be a good time. Or if I missed somebody in the list as well, please, this would be a good time. And I apologize if I missed you. Yes, sir.
I'm not signed up. Can I just come up and...
Please, yes.
Okay. I wasn't planning on coming up here today, but my name is Scott Douglas. I'm an architect here in Seattle. Home address 3041 12th Avenue West, Seattle 98119. This code was written and issued in 1981. Which is the same year I graduated from college and moved up here and began my architectural career. And so if I were to make a comparison, the code is sort of like that neighbor in your neighborhood who has gotten older, their yards become run down, and we just need the influx of new energy to get it back into current standards. And so there are two micro things that I've struggled with as an architect here. We've talked a lot about high-level issues, big setbacks and everything.
But there are two issues I just wanted to get out on the table because it's been a thorn in my side. First of all, in the zoning code, when you measure the measuring point for the zoning code is in Bellevue, is based on the finished average grade in downtown. And so what you're expecting architects and planners and owners to do is figure out what the base of the buildings are going to be in the final form 2 years down the road. In the city of Seattle, and both examples here are going to point to the city of Seattle, so hopefully I don't insult anyone here in Bellevue on this, but they have it simple. In downtown, if you have just a one street exposure or two street, they have a major street elevation midpoint that they work from. It's known from day one, and everyone can work off of that. I can point to two projects here in Bellevue. I'm sure there's more, but I can point to a commercial office building where they played some games with the finished average grade to elevate that measuring point to a point that's probably beyond the intent of the code to begin with. I can point to another residential project where I think they exploited it to the point of probably at least 6 extra feet beyond what the intent is. So you could make life a lot easier for the people that are into the minutia on this stuff if you just went to some format that's similar to the city of Seattle. The other one that's comparable in a way is when it comes to the FAR, there is a provision in the Bellevue Code that allows for the mechanical spaces to be excluded from the FAR calc. Well, again, what you're asking architects to do is anticipate what the spaces are going to be on a final mechanical design that's years out in some cases. In the city of Seattle, they have a flat rate. I believe it's 3.5%. And so I don't know if that's the magic number, but if you just establish that as sort of the square footage that could be excluded from the FAR calc, it's known right from the beginning. I can tell you that there are projects that we've come in with and had the question, well, does a stairwell count? Well, you have some standpipes and stuff, and we'll aggressively go in and call a stairwell mechanical shaft just because who knows, someone might not count it, or it's such an undefined element. And if you look to Seattle and nail that down, everyone can go in and just count on it, and there's no mystery about it 2 years down the road. So that's my granular recommendation.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Anybody else would like to speak during the public hearing? Going once, going twice?
So.
Well, thank you.
Move to close the public hearing.
So, second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
The public hearing is officially closed. So moving on to the next topic on the agenda. Forget about the next. It is our study session. So, if I could propose, and I'd like to solicit input obviously across the commissioners, if I could propose that we take the time to internalize the feedback and then perhaps make sure we come back for the next session and have that be the primary study session, but I would like to get your input.
I'm okay with that, but I'd like to bring up a concept for people to mull over until our next time. We've heard a lot of talk about fee in lieu and accountability for fee in lieu. So, as most people know, I'm an accountant, and I think in terms of accounting treatment, and I've looked into a couple other municipalities, and what they do with their fee in lieu is they put it into a fund. So if there were fee in lieu for an open space incentive, that would be a separate fund from fee in lieu for affordable housing. So I would like to recommend that the Planning Commission propose, I don't think this goes into code, but propose policy where we start funds for fee in lieu payments. That way there's a transparency, there's an accountability, and with that gives the ability to see where the project relates to the project it was earned. So if we can just have people think about that.
Thank you, Bruce.
Thank you.
So maybe to piggyback on maybe a more general statement is it'd be great to get some context. This kind of goes back to the conversation we had at the beginning of last week's meeting about staff maybe contextualizing some of the feedback that we get. So maybe coming up with some alternatives and such, so then consider referral.
Absolutely. Thank you, Bruce. Bruce, too. Any other comments before we get to the topic of the study session? Commissioner Hillhurst?
Well, it would be a topic, I guess, for staff, but I don't know if I can say it to staff here. Is that okay, since you're not here? Okay. Just want to make sure. So one of the questions I have is, we heard very robustly the desire to keep the 20-foot setback versus the newly proposed 40-foot, which occurred last month or 6 weeks ago. And that was because it's an output of the 80-foot tower that has actually been on our, has actually been decided or we discussed over a year ago. And no one has said anything about the 80-foot setback for a year. So my question is, because it's related, I understand, to the 20 versus 40, my question to staff is, could we look at some different scenarios where you have different options where we could be closer to the 20-foot setback, but we could have some wider tower spacing? I understand it's not typical, but that was one of the features we liked. It was different than what other cities do. It was keeping that light, that air, and kind of that really nice open feeling. So I just want to see if it's finite, 80 and 40, or if we need to, if we have any give on that. In our discussions, that would be my only question.
So, of course, the Planning Commission has the latitude to recommend a different outcome, and we will do any analysis that will be helpful to support your decision making and consideration of those changes.
Okay. That would be, I'd like a couple of different options, because, like I said, the 80 foot's been on the free, and we haven't heard anything, and now it's. I don't want to just say no all of a sudden. I want to know if there's... So if we can give a direction that when we meet for our deliberation, if we could have scenarios. I don't know if that's too soon. I think it's 2 weeks, but...
I think that's a fair ask, and I think, yeah, actually, if you could maybe help us follow up, that would be great. Since you're here, we have more questions. I think Commissioner Carlson, please.
Yes, I think one of the reasons we hadn't heard much about the 80-foot rules is we hadn't directly talk to the people directly affected, you know, by it, and that it looked great conceptually, and then we learned how it worked operationally. Here's a question I have, Carol. By chance, do you know, say, the top 10 cities in Washington State by population, do you know what their tower, their range is between towers?
I actually do not know that, but we can certainly bring that back.
That would be good to know.
Emil and Patty Wilma did a white paper when you first considered this conversation, and we can bring that material back as well because there were some comparables in that for other cities.
Okay. I am interested in seeing how other cities, because everybody likes daylight, and I'm just wondering how other cities our size, maybe even a little bigger, have wrestled with this. Thank you.
Any other questions for Carol? While we have Carol, please go.
Some sort of a bring back of charts comparing the proposed. It's late. The 90% versus 85%. What that looks like, and then some sort of a, not a guarantee, but an advisement that it would have. It would have made it through the consultant's analysis, that nothing would have changed in what they analyzed with this change.
So it is super helpful to hear the things that you need more information about. I wanted to let you know kind of the things that the staff had planned to assist you as we move forward as well. So there was a lot of testimony this evening, some that we've heard before, some new. We were planning on bringing that back in kind of themes, so grouping the information that we've heard in themes, and then having the planning commission go through that and moving forward on then making recommendations or any changes to the code that you may require based on analysis of those themes. Would that be useful? Is that, I think we're all on the same page with that? And we didn't anticipate that you would probably have the energy after a couple hours, 3 hours of public hearing to have a full study session this evening and felt that you would likely want to go home and think about the feedback that you've received and then get a summary of that feedback from us. Is there anything else that might be useful to your deliberations on March 22nd when we are scheduled to come back?
So in addition to the summary, you're going to like bring back some more targeted information about the points that came up today?
Yes, okay. We will start bringing that. I don't know that we will have it all on March 22nd, but we will be working through those. This gives a good prioritization list on some of the things that are important and top of mind to the planning commissioners this year.
I'm glad you asked the question, Ms. Helen. I would like to propose that perhaps over the next maybe 2 days, as folks have some time to internalize this feedback, there may be questions coming back to you.
Certainly.
I have some room there in terms of leeway. Commissioner Ryan, please.
I would just have one request. The mid-block through block connection, there's a map in there. We've heard, obviously, from one stakeholder about maybe one location that the reality is it's not a super block, and it's an alley. Like I believe somebody was describing, the gentleman, Mr. Cagle, was describing sometimes alleys are supposed to be alleys. And I guess what I would like is information about all of those proposed connections to determine if those are alleys that should be alleys or those are places that would actually be an appropriate pedestrian or other type of mid-block through block connection.
We can certainly provide some additional information on that topic. With respect to the three-block connection that you were thinking about that Carl Vanderhoof brought up last week, that one was a mistake, and that one is actually on the erotic sheet. So we'll be addressing
right.
that one, but we can bring
it. Yeah, it just sort of made me think, and especially after hearing even from a non-downtown resident of an adjacent neighborhood saying, this could be an issue, I'd hate for us to all of a sudden start saying that we've got a bunch of Wooners or other connections through these places and nobody's got anywhere to wheel out their recycling receptacles or whatever. So it's just unintended consequences, which is actually one of the council guiding principles that we're supposed to look at. So,
The other issue is the errata sheets. So if you have, as you've been going through, found things that you believe are irregularities or typographic errors. We don't have to spend time working on those, but just forward those to us and we will get them corrected as well.
Great, thank you.
On that same note, if you've sent this, I apologize. If it's available somewhere, I apologize, but for me, it would be really helpful to have like a Microsoft Word version or some other version of the document that I could just go into and edit. When it comes to what you just discussed, like these errata things. Otherwise, and Mayor Stokes can attest to this, if you try to read my handwriting, not always good. That was well put.
We can provide that.
Thank you. Just one more question from Carol.
Yes.
I think we had a couple of folks during a public hearing asked for more information. I think they were mostly sitting about the So how would we follow up on that request?
Well, I know how to contact several
okay,
of those.
Perfect, thank
and
you.
Some, for instance, Linda Nohavik was here. She chatted with me at the break, and I'll be getting back to her.
Great, thank you.
So we're available. We've been having meetings with stakeholders from all the different interests groups, and we will continue to do that.
Thank you. I think Ms. Johnson also had a few questions, so
yes.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you.
Right.
Excellent. Thank you very much. All right, so moving on then. So we have our next topic is public comment.
Chair Davidez, can I ask a question?
Sure.
We're looking at March 22nd as your next meeting. Following meeting after that is April the 12th. Now, that happens to fall on school spring break. And I'm curious, are we going to be able to stand in quorum for that meeting? do we know at this point, do I need to be looking at an alternative date like we did in March? You recall the February 22nd meeting, we weren't going to get a quorum because we had, it was the midwinter break. So we held another meeting on March the 1st, and we're doing three meetings actually in March versus just one in February.
I'm around.
Good morning.
I'm around.
I may not be. I don't know yet.
I probably won't be around. Not 100%, but 90%.
Okay. Give it some thought. If your discretion, if you'd like to have a different date for that meeting, let me know. We can decide that at the next meeting. Or otherwise, we'll go for April 12th, for the meeting after March 27th.
That makes sense. Thank you. So moving on to public comment. Yes, ma'am.
Hamlet Johnson, 3741122nd Avenue. In regards to the different city tower sites, Washington State is not very towerful. So I would suggest some other sites. And what I was thinking was Seattle, Portland, Vancouver, BC, San Diego, Sacramento, Phoenix, Calgary, and Edmonton. And I'll send that to you.
Thank you. I don't see any other public comment, so I will take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
There we go. Thank you.